Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network. Okay.
Hey, hey, hey. Look at it, folks.
Welcome one and all to Head On with Bob Kincaid. I am John Fox, broadcasting to you live from the central coast of Australia. What is this, like my annual return? Seems like the last couple of years, somewhere around January, I seem to be able to break myself free and get back on air, and it's been way too long. We got different numbers today, so got some new phone numbers. Got U.S. and an Australian phone number. So any of my Aussie friends that might be tuning in out there, do yourself a favor. Ring in. This could get fun. Now, today, I mean, talk about Sod slash Murphy's Law, right? The day I come back on air, the internet's blacked out. So last night, I'm kind of thinking, okay, how are we going to handle this? I'm panicking last night before going to bed. Okay, do I need to go to all these websites and print stuff out because it may not be there tomorrow? And I said, you know what? Bugger it. I'm going to go on and work with what I can find. Because there's been some debates going on, you know, Facebook and that, and some people are like, what's the point of this whole blackout? I was like, well, you know, it's to make a point. It's to make a really serious point. And so I really, really, you know, I know it's prayer meeting and everything, and we'll probably get to some of that a little bit later. But being that what today is, I think we should discussing what happens if some legislation like this were actually to go through. I mean, I've got a couple of pieces. Texas Betsy and Susan and Jean and everybody have been sending me some really great stuff on this. And I'll get into some of the detail. I mean, y'all, most of y'all that listen to this network, listen to this program, would be fairly well up on what's going on. But, you know, it's pretty scary stuff, and I have to ask certain questions, and I'll pose these now, and we can discuss them later. I'll give out the phone numbers in a minute. But I really want to kind of ponder this concept. You know, just as a certain segment of the American people are waking up, and it seems as though a clash of, I don't know, the classes is fixing to happen. Is this all a move just to make sure that we have this little switch just in case the people get a little too loud? Ah, y'all can't wait. We got a phone call already. Let's see who we got. Welcome to Head On. Who we got?
This is your
How you going, Susan?
Well, I just wanted to tell people the show post is going up as we speak, and if they go to the show post, the numbers are there.
Righto, and I was going to give them out in a minute after I got done with a little bit of an opening rant. Following Bob's lead, that seems to work, but I don't have the bank of phones to just line you all up in like he does.
Okay, now, here's my little addition to your rant.
Okay.
First of all, one of the co-sponsors to one of these pieces of... I've been using the word drick because I'm trying to be civilized here. What I want to actually say is best expressed in three different languages, none of which is English, and is...
Caca?
Which, yeah. Anyway, none of it's used in polite company. Would you believe that one of the co-sponsors of this piece of drick is the head of the Democratic National Committee?
Well, that's one of the things that's kind of interesting. There's been a couple of pieces floating around where it seems as though the administration may be starting to fall on the side of Silicon Valley. But yet, regardless of which way he goes, he's going to end up dissing a huge contribution, you know, pool. Whether
right.
You know, it's the content creators, which are the people still trying to live by an old model that's dead. They just haven't seen the horse shot enough times to believe it's dead.
I'm one of those people that if I see something put out by somebody who can conceivably be represented by RIA, that's an automatic no. I won't buy it. Just on those principles.
I work full time in the industry that's supposedly taken the biggest hit by all this copyright infringement stuff. And I see it as a complete load of shit, really, because the thing that's proven time and time again, I mean, you keep seeing the studies released, is, you know, legislation like this is going to do nothing to stop pirating. We know this. But what has been proven time and time again is people pirate when there's not a viable legal model. And so if people have access where they are to something where they can pay a reasonable price for it and get the service, they will pay for it. It's when access becomes unavailable that people tend to pirate.
Yeah. And putting a wall around the United States to make it look like China. Guys, use your heads. Well, maybe that's what they want to do. I don't know.
Well, but, you know, it's so funny. This is just another one of these examples of what I like to call appearing to do something. You know, but it actually doesn't do anything for, you know.
My mother called it the cut off your nose to spite your face syndrome.
There is a bit of that. There is a bit of that for sure. I mean, the record industry, as in Sony, Warner's, you know, the majors, mm-hmm. what's left of them, they have completely been shooting themselves in the foot. And bit by bit, that model is being just taken apart. And it's the same people that, you know, control television and radio and all these other things. And it's about actually taking away their market control. They don't mm-hmm. want anyone else to be able to provide these things. They want to have an exclusive, their own little mini monopolies. There can't be any kind of competition to their model. But unfortunately, like you say, by ignoring what's happening, those models are already dead. They just don't realize it yet. I was given an offer that didn't pan out last year to go possibly come to the States and also go do Europe with a young Australian band. And what shocked me about it wasn't, you know, band going to America or anything, but this was like a very L.A. rock kind of thing, you know, very, very schmick, very Guns N' Roses, you know, kind of thing. And they actually got $500,000 deal out of Sony, which I, like, have never heard of in the last decade.
Sony's desperate.
Well, and what surprises me is that they're putting money into something that I thought had been done so many times already that no one was interested anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And is that just a sign that their musical tastes and what they're looking to put out are just as behind the times as their business model?
Yeah, something like that. Now, here's one thing that the people ought to know. For today, on the main website, there's going to be, up on the feature thing, there's going to be, for today only, there's going to be a black, two black rectangles, one of which is the show post, and the other one is a post about the protest, saying the horn joins and so on and so forth, and explains why. Things related to that, to the SOPA protest, are also marked with a black rectangle down just below the feature section. One of those is what I call a blacklist. Pardon my, oh, really bad pun. It's a list of all the sponsors and co-sponsors of both bills. And people, if you recognize someone on that list, call them up.
Yeah, it's time to get on the phone. Yeah, it seems as though these protests and the noise that's being made seem to be having some effect. You know, I mean, the administration says that they're not going to back this thing the way that it is, but I seriously don't trust them.
As far as I can pick them up and throw them.
Well, just as an example, you've been seeing going around how the administration nixes the XL pipeline. You've been seeing that all over the place? Complete horseshit. It's because enough noise got made about one part of the route that it's been kicked back for them to reapply with it coming through a different place. So as the administration does just as good a job of comforting lies as Bush did, as far as I'm concerned, on these things. I mean, there's some things like, man, I could run up and hug Barack Obama. The thing with Betty White, fucking awesome. You know, just sheer class, showed himself as having the ability to be one of the people. But then he turns around and his people put out this crap that they've nixed the pipeline, which is not true.
Yeah,
and so it constantly is coming back to me is that this thing, it's this thing of like going, see what we did? Now stop paying attention.
That's why we have to keep paying attention, because the minute they think our back is turned, they are going to come back with this. They're going to keep. We could kill this thing. I don't know how many times, and they're going to keep coming back with it.
Yep.
Never mind how many how unconstitutional it is. All you have to do is read Article 1, Section 1 of the Constitution. The thing is illegal as all get out.
Well, and
with the rats on duty.
Yeah, and you know, this originally the bill had the whole DNS domain name system provision in it, which has been removed. That was the really, really, really scary one. Because that's what China's got, right?
Yeah.
Disconnect your domain from your server with a switch. Just shut down your name servers. It happens in a second. I could do it to any of our sites in a moment. So
until they found out how easy it was to get around it.
No, DNS, you're not going to be able to get around.
Want to bet.
Well, I mean, you might be able to.
The DNS is the way it was written, it didn't include the numerical.
Well, no, that's the whole point of the DNS system. It takes the alpha and points it at your numerical. All right? It's nothing but just like, you know, that server's over here. And yeah. So all they have to do is disconnect your DNS, and then the only way people can find you is via your IP address.
Mm-hmm.
So that is able to just disconnect at a second. And the problem is that there's no legal proceeding in which to do this in this proposed legislation. There's absolutely no legal proceeding.
Yeah. It's strictly by fiat, and that's just I'm going, wait a minute, what happened to due process here, folks?
That's exactly it, and that's why this kind of legislation actually puts us on the same level as China when it comes to limiting speech and discussion. So, you know, that's one of the reasons I think that this is a really good exercise that Wikipedia, Raw Story, all these other websites are doing. I think it's a really, really smart thing to do because even the so-called apolitical, which I actually don't believe that there's an apolitical person out there. They just, they're just in denial, right? But it's going to be the apolitical thing that's sitting there going, hey, man, who wrote that song on that album in 1965? Hey, where the hell's Wikipedia?
Yeah.
And you're gonna a whole bunch of people and then they'll get the thing. There's this legislation proposed, right? And what I've also found interesting is that there's been some really, really weird, what I think are manufactured news pieces on this. There was one yesterday in the Sydney Morning Herald where supposedly Wikipedia editors were complaining about the protest because they thought it was going to destroy the site, that it was going to ruin the reputation, and that what, next time we go down to save the whales? And trying to make this thing that, you know, we're not supposed to be, you know, in the business of advocacy. Well, you get into advocacy when something comes up that's going to impact the very thing that you do, the core of your business, which is the sharing of information. And if you have one link to something that someone complains about, this shit, they could shut you down, even without the DNS clause in it.
Yeah. And that includes Wikipedia.
Marion Delgado's in the chat room from Tom Hartman's chat room, and first time I've seen Marion in probably a couple of years, and she's up there posting the IP addresses of the different sites in the chat room, going, "Here's Rapid Share, here's the Pirate Bay." See, like you said, as you know, build a 10-foot fence, we'll build an 11-foot ladder. But
if anybody wants me to, I'll post the IP address for Demonoid.
I can post him for the horn too, but yet they can still go. That's just the instantaneous shutoff where someone goes, runs around, gets a new domain name.
Yeah.
But I'll get into this a little bit. I'll get into the details. There's a piece that Betsy sent me that I thought laid it out really well and really concise. What's wrong with both these bills, and how it does put us on a par with China.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's shocking. That's shocking. You know, and if we're supposed to be the model of free speech and all of that crap in the world.
Okay. There was a deal. There's a YouTube video, and I think I'm going to post it. Okay. Normally, I wouldn't, because Anonymous has gotten a lot of bad press.
Of course.
But in this thing, they posted a deal about this SOPA. And that was one of the points they brought up.
And to me,
it's one of the things that they need to, you know, not many people are bringing it up. So here's Anonymous coming along. Basically, it's a bunch of wackos. And they're saying, guys, you need to pay attention to this. They're not making threats. They're not saying we're going to take down that, da, 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 da. What they're doing is they're saying, pay attention.
Yeah.
Now, this is what Anonymous should be doing. And they're doing it for the right reasons.
Ah, yeah. And, you know, I mean, to try and portray Anonymous as anything specific is really
Yeah, I realize that.
Yeah.
And that's why I don't normally post anything from Anonymous. But this one time, they hit it dead on.
Oh, they do many times. It's a very interesting, for lack of a better term, ragtag kind of organization that seems to be able to keep their anonymity, which is wonderful, and be a really, really quiet threat to power and money.
Yeah.
You know, and so, of course, the power and money is going to do everything they can to portray them as, you know, terrorists and evildoers.
Yes. And it's probably just a bunch of, you know, teenagers sitting around their computers snickering as they realize they've got all these media conglomerates just freaked out. But sometimes you get it right.
Oh, yeah.
And you get it right for the right reasons, and then it's time to pay attention.
Yeah.
And I think this is one of those times.
And so it's interesting. I think, when the question was posed by one of my Facebook friends, you know, what's the point? It's like, wow, really? You have to ask that question?
Yeah. I mean, God, what planet are you from, people?
You know, and someone else said, hey, I got enough, you know, his half-assed joke, I got enough downloaded movies to last me ages. And it's like, I'm sitting there thinking, yeah, it's all about you and your movies, dude.
Yeah. Right. And I have visions of all of those people in Germany as they voted for the Enabling Act, you know, and I'm going, I want to scream and pound my head up against the wall and, people, will you open a stupid history book, please?
Please. You just reminded me of one that I'm going to get to pretty soon. You saw that one link that I sent you about the Mexican-American studies?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. The banned books.
Oh, yeah. Talk about it. Let's rewrite history by omission. But thanks, Susan. I'm going to open up the line in case someone else wants to get in on
no
it.
Problem.
And I do want to get into this whole analysis piece that Betsy sent me because I think it's really good.
Sorry to interrupt your rant.
You're okay. You're okay. It's all good. Thank you so much for everything you've done because, geez, I haven't done this in a while.
We shall persevere. We shall persevere.
All right. Thanks, Susan. Take care of yourself.
Love you.
All right.
Love
take care.
Deal.
All right. Bye. And that, of course, was the wonderful Susan, one of the many news ninjas around here that make it possible to do half this stuff that we do. All right. What are we going to do here? I might play a tune and then come back and see if either I got somebody on the line or if not, I want to get into this little piece that Texas Betsy sent me from, where's this from? TechDirt. It's really good. And I'll probably cover a fair bit of it. It's an excellent little piece. But in the meantime, let's find a tune. And let's see, where should we go? Oh, I like this one. One of the things that I've been doing since you all last heard me is gotten back into music performance. It's been a while. And started playing with a guy by the name of Di Pritchard, amazing guitar player here in Australia, plays in a band called Rose Tattoo, a legendary Australian band. And we do a little tune, an old Billy Preston tune. Now, I'm going to play the original just because I've re-fallen in love with this song. We do it. It's a bit faster and a bit more rocking and all guitar-driven, but it's just an awesome track. Billy Preston. And there's something about the lyric of this song that makes me think of the Republican pageant going on at the moment. You know, the just kind of seems to never go anywhere. It just seems to be the same kind of circular firing squad. So without further ado, Mr. Billy Preston and Will It Go Round in Circles. You're listening to Head On with Bob Kincaid with your guest host, John Fox.
on the Head On Radio Network. The numbers to ring in Australia, 02-8003-6934, and in the United States, 347-903-6935. We'll see you after this.
Will it go round and circle? Will it fly high like a bird up in the sky? Will it go round and circle? Will it fly high like a bird up in the sky? Once in a while, I've got a story, ain't got no mother. Let the bad guy win every once in a while. Will it go round in circles? Will it fly high like a bird up in the sky? Will it go round in circles? Will it fly high like a bird? Steps. I'm gonna let the music move me around. Will it go round in circles? Will it fly high like a bird up in the sky? Will it go round in circles? Will it fly high like a bird up?
The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
Welcome back to Head On. I am John Fox, filling in for Bob Kincaid here tonight. As Bob is heading to D.C. for the family something or other convention thing. I forgot to get all the details. Shows you how well I'm tuned into the network these days. Anyway, bait no more. Be aggressive! It's a really weird day, man. I can feel that part of the internet is down, and it's just wild. But this track is also, like, dedicated to all these Republican candidates. Just keep fucking going after each other, boys. I'm loving it. I know it's a bit of show and tell and a bit of kabuki, but watching Newt Gingrich go after a venture capitalist is some of the best insanity I have seen in a long time. So anyway, Faith No More, never tire of that band. In fact, singer of Faith No More was just playing in Sydney this week with his band. I think doing something from this, some of the soundtrack stuff that he's been doing lately. Anyway, getting back to where we were. Betsy's saying she can't see me on Skype for some reason. I am showing online, foxed up. I see everybody. I'm not seeing Betsy for some reason. I don't know why. I wish I had a clue. But anyway, you can, aside from the phone numbers, it all comes into the same thing. You can find me on Skype, I hope, via FoxedUp, F-O-X-D-U-P. And the phone numbers to ring in the United States, 347-903-6935. That's 347-90-FOXED-5, F-O-X-D-5. And in Australia, 02-8003-6934. So it's 02-800-FOXED-4. I tried to get some head-on numbers, but just couldn't find any. Anyway. Yeah, it's in the what? No 800 number? No, sorry, Tim. No 800 number. Hopefully one day we're going to find a way to be able to port an 800 number around from number to number. We had a host in the past that had one of those, and it was quite cool. But we don't have that facility. Maybe at some point we will get that facility. But, yeah, that's just the way it is. But anyway, I was mentioning before, and I'll get into it now. Betsy sent me this post from TechDirt. And in the email, the bloody author's not even in here. I'll have to go look it up on the web. But I've got it in this email she sent me. And whoever the author is, it's called Analysis, Why SOPA and PIPA Are a Bad Idea, Dangerous, and Unnecessary. And the writer mentions that he wrote this definitive post on why these are both bad bills. Things have changed since the original bills. Like I mentioned before, the DNS thing's been removed and some other things. But this, he says, key claims by supporters of these bills is that those of us opposed have been spewing false claims to increase the hysteria. While it's true that there is some misinformation making the rounds, I see no evidence that it's limited to the anti-SOPA PIPA crowd. In fact, it appears to be worse on the part of supporters. While some anti-SOPA PIPA folks might be misinformed about specifics, they're at least speaking honestly. The pro forces appear to be deliberately misstating facts. So let's look at the facts. PIPA and SOPA are now very similar bills, both with significant problems. In fact, the remaining differences in the bill each have serious problems, which is why neither bill is a better bill, since both are terrible. It's claimed this is supposed to give law enforcement and private individuals and companies the tools to go after foreign, in inverted commas, websites that are offering infringing either copyright or trademark content. Bills offer two ways to do this, via the Attorney General taking action against the sites, or via a private right of action in which a copyright or trademark holders take direct action themselves against a site they believe is dedicated to infringement. And see, this is where it gets all a bit weird.
And that it's the language of legislation. The bill does require a half-hearted attempt to contact the operators of the sites being accused. But if the AG or rights holders feel they can't reach the owners, they can go directly after the site itself. An in rem process rather than an in personam. Following a literally one-sided court hearing, a judge can then put the accused site on what is effectively a blacklist. If it's the AG bringing the action, it means that search engines, or under PIPA, information location tools, a broad term that covers an awful lot of the Internet, have to magically figure out ways to block any and all links to the site in question. If it's either the AG or private rights holders, then payment processors and ad networks would be forced to stop doing business with the sites on the blacklist. So, I mean, just purely in could you do this terms. So, some website somewhere posts someone's copyrighted content, and that person who's posted it has tagged it properly, all that kind of stuff. Robots come around, go crawly, 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 crawly. They don't know it's copywritten material. They can't tell. And it pops up in a search engine. So does this mean, thank you, Betsy. The author of this piece is Mike Masnick. It's a great piece. So Google, referred to in PIPA as an information location tool. Okay, that's like the whole Internet. What is the Internet but an information location tool? You might find porn, but it's pornographic information. You know? So anyway, so it's kind of like, well, we tried to get a hold of them. Which means that they, you know, sent an email to what they knew was a defunct email address. That's an attempt to contact, so let's move forward and just shut them down. The piece continues here. Under both bills, the definitions of what is a site dedicated to infringement or theft of U.S. property are pretty broad and open to abuse. While supporters of the bills love to insist that they're narrowly tailored, a simple look at PIPA shows that that's wrong. It notes that you can dedicate, that you can be dedicated to infringement if the key service you offer facilitates infringement. Think about that for a second. Pretty much every user-generated content site or communication tool or computer can facilitate infringement. A virus could make me facilitate infringement. Okay? This, like, it's really creepy, this. Let's see. You know, he says pretty much every user-generated content site or communication tool or computer can facilitate infringement. Now, supporters of the bill insist the most sites are safe because the bill says that there's no significant use other than enabling or facilitating infringement. But again, note they're not saying that it has no significant use other than infringement. It says no significant use other than enabling or facilitating infringement. That's pretty much the entire Internet there. So that could be someone posting a link to copyrighted content in your comments, and if you don't have someone following, going and moderating and following every single link that comes into your site, an AG can shut you down. Now, they like to say that this is all just about foreign sites. But Mike here says that's a red herring. It's a favorite of the pro-PIPA SOPA folks, but it's a lie. While the current bill targets foreign sites, all the remedies and enforcement require compliance by domestic sites. That's costly. I recognize that policy analysts, lawyers, lobbyists, and politicians who have never actually run a business think this stuff is simple. But for those of us who actually run companies, this is terrifying. We now have to worry about staying in compliance with a broad law that's almost impossible to comply with in any realistic matter. In our debate yesterday, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce's Steve Tepp insisted that there was no liability for any domestic site. This is ridiculous. What he meant was no direct monetary liability. Leave it to an out-of-touch policy guy to think that it's only a liability if there's a potential cost to you in money in court. The liability is the possibility of being dragged and the possibility of facing additional punishment sanctions for failing to obey an impossible to obey court order to cut off certain users. This is a tremendous liability. This is just completely undoable. And he goes into five things why it won't solve the problem. And I'll get the link posted in the chat room. And I think I sent this to Susan. first of all, won't do anything to solve the problem. I kind of got into that, and he pretty much says the same thing that I do about the old business model is dead. But he uses this really good example. Let's see. Piracy is a service issue. Oh, yeah. More to the point, multiple studies have shown that piracy is almost always a service issue, in that people resort to infringing options when no good options exist. A detailed four-year study on the issue around the globe found consistently that infringement was never an enforcement issue, but exclusively a business model issue. Provide services that give people what they want and watch piracy decline. Lots of people have shown the industry how this works, and they still ignore it. A perfect example is how Valve Software saw lots of piracy in Russia, a hotbed of infringement, and used that as free market research to establish a presence in Russia, which is now a huge moneymaker for them, not by enforcing against infringers, but by offering a better legitimate service. And this is what I was talking about with Susan. People only steal it when they can't get it a legitimate way. And I don't have any tears to shed for the content creators and whatnot who have controlled distribution for so long. And it's the control of distribution that gave them their market control. The distribution system has been shattered. Completely and utterly shattered. But they're still trying to live within it. And you made bucks when it comes to music. You didn't invest in anything. You just kept sucking at the teat until the breast was empty, and then wonder why no one makes anything new and good. Because nothing's come back. So if there are a few people out there ripping you off blind, you know, not feeling too bad about it. You know? Anyway, point two, putting massive liability and compliance costs on startups will hinder the most necessary innovation and jobs. And this, I think, is probably one of the best points, okay? At the moment, web-based startups and whatnot are some of the biggest generators of new jobs in the world. All right, hang on, we got a phone call. Hey, Sandra, welcome. How are ya?
Oh, I'm all right. So it went through, huh? Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah. It's beautiful. It's crystal. How are you?
Oh, shoot. Well, I thought I'd try this way since it's cheap and free.
We like that.
But, no, I was just, you know, the whole SOPA thing is just, you know, sort of the battle of the titans, because you have a lot of other large corporations who are leading the pushback. It's not so much us little people down here. I think Google and Wikipedia, you know, there's a whole bunch of entities that would suffer completely if this went through. But the thing that's killing me is the movie people are trying to say it's infringing on them when they've had record years, one after another.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, it's incredibly disingenuous. I think it's more what you're trying to say, control. And they've lost that sort of dominance in, you know, in content.
Yeah.
And it ain't coming back. The genie's out.
Yeah.
I mean, if they want to make it like China, I suppose. But, you know, I think that I don't know how this is going to work out. I just read an article. You know, there's a rumor that they're still trying to hammer out some sort of backroom deal because, you know, the money bags, you know, they're pushing hard for this because they see it all slipping away. But the same interest for doing this when, you know, home video cameras came out. You understand what I'm saying? It's the same people. Every time innovation hits, there they are trying to, make sure they can continue fleecing people.
Exactly. You know that basically over the last 20 years, they've gone back to the federal government 18 times to continue to tighten up copyright law.
Oh, no, it's incredible. And it really flies in the face of this, oh, we have to have small government. No, big government is what is necessary for these huge interests to maintain their dominance. So, I mean, it's so disingenuous to hear these Republicans talk about small government. They're lying. They're lying to the uneducated, no critical thinking, low information plebes who continue to vote against their own interests. And, you know, I think the internet thing is interesting because I think there'll be some severe pushback because what they're proposing is completely, unworkable on some levels because, yeah, right. They're just going to be taking down sites. I mean, it's just, I always said that at the end, they're going to try to make the internet into a psychedelic cable. And they're working real hard to do that. And, you know, if people don't push back in the United States, it's China, it's indefinite detention, it's a whole sort of a combo. You know, you have to look at these laws in total, but they're all spelling the Enabling Act up in this motherfucker. Oh, sorry.
No, that's that's all right. I feel exactly the same way. And, you know, I work in an industry that's been dealing with this back and forth fight, you know, for 50 years. You know, the music industry has been battling this thing. But, you know, back when CDs first came out, you know, you talk about, like, videotape and all that, you know, VH and, you know, the movie producers went all batshit crazy. But then suddenly they made a lot of money on video rentals by selling special rental copies to the stores that were super expensive because of the rental income that they were going to get. I remember I had friends that ran one of the first video rental places I ever saw. When I found out what one videotape cost them, I was just like, you're kidding me.
Yeah, well, no, but it's just, like I said, the hypocrisy is just disgusting because on the one hand, you have the people talking about, you know, creative destruction and capitalism and how that promotes innovation. In the meanwhile, no, you have huge monopolies buying politicians to maintain their monopolies that are dying on the vine. I mean, terrestrial radio, for example, you know, how much government support does that need because of their fear of what's happening anyway? You know, it's stunning. The internet is getting way too big and they have to clamp down because I think they got to look, see at what's going to come down when the economy gets really bad. People are going to turn the internet into a means to challenge the authority, and I think that's what it's all about.
I agree with you. I think that's exactly what this is about, because suddenly there seems to be like a heightened push for this.
Right.
Ever since Occupy Wall Street didn't just kind of disappear, and as Occupy continues to morph and find new ways to be effective and find new places. I mean, we've been even having stuff here where Occupy Sydney people have followed around politicians at speaking engagements around here. In fact, this was hilarious. One of my bosses, one of the guys that I work for, a sound company, posted something a few weeks ago saying, got a call yesterday to supply PA for a Labor Party meeting up in Gosford, which is just near here. The next day, he gets a call from Occupy Sydney people to hire PA to shout down the very PA that was hired by the same guy for the politicians, saying, we're an equal opportunity PA hire company.
Right.
Right? So, which I thought was hilarious.
That is funny.
Little would they know that one guy made money off of both ends of the argument. Which you could say about banks and wars, couldn't you?
Yeah, that's the same. I mean, it's the same thing about the sort of capitalism. It's like war, no war, peace. You know, all of it is like money is to be made, but the government chooses the winners and losers, and ain't no free market. That's the thing. And this sort of struggle right here just gives you a real bird's eye view of how it actually works. You know, that there is no free market. There's a government that decides who gets what. That's all. And anything else is a bunch of BS.
I agree. And, you know, I've now been gone from the United States for 13 years, right?
Mm.
When I left, we still had a saxophone-playing, womanizing guy that kind of made the country look better than the rest of the world. And everything's kind of like fallen apart since. But
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No. But the thing that's been really bizarre to watch is I keep watching with the Republican infighting and whatnot and the whole push to go further and further and further and further and further and further to the right. I keep getting the feeling that the United States has turned into some sort of twisted Margaret Atwood novel.
Yeah, I mean, it is really, you know, if you pay attention, which unfortunately a huge part of the population don't. I mean, I saw a poll that only 54% of the people is even aware of the National Defense Authorization Act. So the idea that there's a something that says that they can detain American citizens indefinitely. Only a half the population, and it's even probably less than that, is aware of that at all. And so you have huge swaths of the population that, you know, they just don't know, have a clue about what's going on. And the police state, I mean, it's happened so fast. That's the thing that's disturbing. And, you know, Obama, I always say empire done in blackface, because had some cracker been up there doing this, it would be a whole different pushback. But because it's a black man, somehow it's muted responses on our side. And it's just disturbing as hell, because I fear what he's going to do in his final term between me and you. I'm not a very I'm not very optimistic about Mr. Obama. I don't know.
Well, I swear I'm always so of two minds with him, and you know, I never had any kind of false ideas that he was anything but a centrist. I mean, I kind of always got that. And, you know, the Republicans have played bullshit games all through the first term and whatever. So I can understand people that say, hey, wait for the second term, he's going to unleash. But I don't actually believe that. Well, I think that there will be some things that he might go, okay, I don't have to get reelected, so bugger y'all, this is how I want to do it.
Well, a few years ago, he did an interview where he said one of the things he is really keen on is, quote, entitlement reforms. This is his major push. So I just look at what people say and do.
Yeah.
And he seems to be real keen on being the Democrat that so-called reforms entitlements, which means essentially finishing off the New Deal. And so that's why I look at him fisheye, because if that's what he wants his legacy to be, well, we're in trouble, because the Senate can easily go Republican and the House. Now, the clown show on the other side makes me think that Obama could win a re-election, although who knows if Europe goes under, what's going to happen to the economy, and that might be a problem for him. But if he has to run against that rich parasite, Romney, I mean, it gets worse by the day with this fool.
Oh, yeah.
It came out that, oh, yeah, I do have offshore accounts in the Cayman Islands. It's like, dude, We're in an economic nightmare, and you think people are keen on, you know, electing some rich fuck like you?
The
optics are bad on him, so.
Well, I mean, and they're so unbelievably tone deaf, and I actually wanted to,
yeah.
I was hoping you'd ring in because, you know, you obviously caught the thing at the debate the other night with the Newt Juan Williams exchange, right?
Yeah, I was just like, have I shifted back to Antebellum? Are they going to lynch this fool on TV?
Well, yeah.
Because that was outrageous.
Well, it gets even more outrageous. I don't know if you've heard this yet. Just a couple of hours ago, Newt Gingrich was applauded for this by one of his own supporters. I have the audio. And so this is from Martin Bashir's show, and he had Dyson on, who I love, and strap yourself in.
Horrible by them in the first place.
Professor, Speaker Gingrich is clearly suffering no repercussions from his confrontation with Juan Williams on Monday's debate, at least among his devoted fans. Listen to this exchange, please, between Gingrich and one of his supporters less than 2 hours ago.
I would like to thank you, Mr. Speaker, for putting Mr. Juan Williams in his place the other night. His supposed question was totally ludicrous, and we support you.
Thank you very much.
Juan Williams. Can you believe that?
Well, yeah, because, I mean, you know, we are talking about the United States where the regressive mind always has to have a dog to kick. And in this country, you know, it tends to be black folks in their minds. So anytime Negroes are sort of relegated to, you know, where these crackers think we all should be, then he's going to get the support. We are in South Carolina.
But that whole thing, they're going, that line of putting Mr. Williams in his place.
Yeah,
boy,
exactly.
That sound like you told that uppity black person to fuck off.
Right.
And that whole crowd's just like, yeehaw!
Yeah.
And I would have loved to have seen what that woman looked like, because she sounded like she was probably just, like, covered in diamonds and Tiffany and probably has never lifted a finger in her life.
Well, that's the thing, because, you know, you always, like I said before, you know, these people continue to vote for Republicans who really don't give a shit about them. You know, you think Mitt Romney cares about those poor white folks? And no, he don't care. But those people, they're so scared of being usurped in whatever fucked up hierarchy they have in their minds, they continue voting for these people. And now that there's a Negro in the White House, they really have something to rail against. And in the meanwhile, their whole economic life is being sort of laid to waste, and it's neo-feudalism.
yeah, that's definitely the way to portray it. And just before I came on air, I had Chris Matthews' show playing on the laptop, and he went to this same audio, and another African American professor from somewhere, I didn't recognize him and I didn't catch his name, but as they were talking about this and he came up with some response. He says, you know, this whole thing that Gingrich has been going off about, that American blacks don't understand a work ethic. Right. And you know, he said, you know, what about all the slavery? And then Chris Matthews says, yeah, how about some payback for that 250 years of free labor?
Well, it's not even
like, wow, Chris, nice.
It's not even remotely discussed in this country, the idea that, you know, the sort of level of economic power. Don't tell me that if you have hundreds of years of free labor, you're not going to build up, you know, a powerful country. I mean, it's just common sense, but no one's even, that's not even in the discussion. I'm just sick of being the whipping boy for these Republican crackers. I mean, that story will never end with these people.
Well,
with Santorum, all of them are just, it seems to be the first thing out their mouths. And Newt Gingrich is so sanctimonious about it. I just want to take something and do something horrible to that man. He is foul. He's disgusting, and he's quite proud of his sort of Dog Whistle Theater. He keep running all over the place.
That's the part that I find the most, like, just disgusting, is the way that he seems to revel in it.
You know?
He revels in it.
Yeah,
and
it's just like, wow.
So, I mean, you know, what... I just can't even imagine, you know, Newt Gingrich will never be the candidate. It's just not going to happen.
Well, yeah, and plus he's hated in his own party, too. He's a really unsavory personality who hasn't, you know, engendered much, you know, love from his own. I mean, look what he did to Mitt Romney, because he was personally insulted. He decided to, you know, make a video that's left of me, practically,
yeah,
to run his ass. And I thought, you know, so that's like he has personal issues. But in the meanwhile, though, I think Romney is probably going to be he's probably going to end up winning in the end. And, you know, you got this dude talking about, oh, we can't discuss inequality unless we're in quiet rooms. I mean, I am so disturbed by Mitt Romney. I can't tell you. He's a complete freak.
Do you have, because I know you work normally, like, kind of during the day, if I remember right, but do you ever catch Al Sharpton's show at all?
No, I don't. We don't have a TV in the house anymore, so unless I can catch clips of it, you know, on the interwebs,
Sometime go to whatever his show site is and look up his spot on Quiet Rooms.
Oh, good. I have to, because I know he probably took that to task.
And he does such beautiful things in a theatrical way. I mean, I am like the biggest screaming atheist you'll ever meet, but I love Reverend Al Sharpton, because I think he's fucking great man.
He was James Brown's, you know, manager back in the day.
He's
well in the music scene.
It's about people's actions, not necessarily what they say or what they profess. It's what they actually do with their lives. And one of the promos, Saturday Night Live even took the Mickey out of him, and he loved it. He thought it was hilarious. So he does this promo thing, which I think is just genius, and only someone like Al Sharpton could do this. He talks about when, you know, he's standing out some, you know, New York strip house front, you know. He's like, you know, I grew up in an area just like this, and, you know, when we come home from school in the afternoon, our mamas would be working, but they, you know, they would have baked, you know, blueberry pie and had it out to cool. And then when they come home and find that all the blueberry pie was gone, they'd be sitting there going, "Did you eat the blueberry pie?" And we're sitting there going, "No, we didn't eat the blueberry pie." Meanwhile, I got blueberry all over our faces. He goes, "That's the Republicans in this economy. We didn't do it, but they got the blueberry pie all over the face."
Right. Yeah, that's a good one.
And, you know, I try and do any kind of impersonation. It's silly, but just his delivery. And I like, and one of the things that I like that people make fun of him over is that he's not television savvy. But it brings a certain amount of realism to it. That, like, he's not looking at the right camera sometimes, because he's actually thinking about what he's saying.
Well, not only that, but, you know, anybody who isn't the norm, you know, the sort of, quote, normal-looking television type is welcome, because it's so sterile and weird, so...
Absolutely, absolutely. Al comes on about 9 in the morning my time, so it's kind of like after the breakfast news. That's the first thing I watch.
No, I'll look at, see if I can find some clips, because I've always liked him. I know he, you know, he's running his various games, but listen, I don't hear about Al Sharpton and his, you know, bank accounts in the Cayman. You know what I'm saying? Or he's not some trust fund baby like Mitt Romney, thinking that he can just buy the White House or that it's his turn. You know, give me a break. I mean, you know, a lot of people always say, oh, you know, black people are in lockstep for Obama. But all you got to do is look at this fool. And I'm even like, I got to vote for Obama because I can't. What else are we going
to
do?
Yeah, we're down to the lesser of two evils thing. Now, have you heard about Rocky Anderson and the Justice Party?
Yeah, I haven't really looked deeply into that, but is he on the ballots or what's happening?
They actually just founded the party, and he's put himself up as a nominee. In other words, it seems as though they've created a new party, and they're wanting people to join.
Well, yeah, because I mean, I know you have to get a certain percentage to get a real look-see. So yeah. I wonder if they're on the ballot here in California for the primaries, because, you know, I'm all for voting for someone else in the primaries, because, to be honest, I'm foreign policy wise, I'm terrified of Obama, because when he said, okay, let's destroy Libya, I'm like, dude, you bombing an African country? What the fuck? Yeah. And so that really did my head in, you know, because whatever you want to say about Gaddafi, the thing that's really interesting is that, A, he was about to sell his oil in denominations other than the dollar, and he had his own central bank. You see what I'm saying? So there's two things going on with Gaddafi that makes me think, oh, okay, central bank not selling his oil in dollars. And so, oh, let's destroy him. And so, you know, there's too much. And now there's the rattling at Iran, and that freaks me out because would he really start another war?
I'm more worried about Israel starting it on our behalf. That's what's really freaking me out, man.
Yeah, but we're like, you know, in lockstep, so who knows?
Well, I mean, I sent something to Bob last week that I don't know if he got to mention on air, but like the CIA came out and reported about some incidents in 2007, 2008 where Mossad was using U.S. passports and U.S. cash, portraying themselves as CIA agents without having any kind of, you know, official cover for any of this. And the head of the CIA said that they went absolutely fucking batshit when they found out. It seemed as though they didn't give a shit what anybody knew. And they were doing this in London.
Yeah. No, and then they did that whole thing in Dubai where they, you know, assassinated that Hamas leader or Hezbollah. I forget what. But, you know, they're pretty out of control. But the Obama administration don't seem to be able to rein Netanyahu in because he seems to undermine Obama by going to the rabid Republicans in the House. I mean, Cantor basically said, for all intents and purposes, his loyalty is to Israel before us. It's just like, hello?
That should get you kicked out right there.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, that's not,
I got a real problem with the idea of dual citizens being able to hold office.
It's bizarre.
If I ran, like, next year, I should get my Australian citizenship after 14 long years. I'll still be an American citizen. But if I decide to run for office in this country, first thing I do would be to give up, like a local office, maybe not. But once I went for some sort of national office,
yeah,
I feel compelled to rescind my U.S. citizenship because of the very reason I shouldn't have a get-out clause from extradition if I do something against the people that I'm supposed to be representing. So the idea that we can have these dual American and Israeli nationals actually, and that goes for any nation, you know? Now, if you migrated to the United States, I can understand being able to keep it. But it's these, especially these people that just go to Israel to become Israeli citizens and come back and all that kind of stuff, because there's a whole lot of American, like, American-sounding people in Israel. And, you know, and I don't want to, I'm going to end up getting some serious shit here, but I don't like the idea of someone who has, and I think this should be for any nation. If you're serving in federal politics, you shouldn't have citizenship in another country.
Well, now you have Rahm Emanuel, who's the mayor of Chicago, who actually served in the Israeli Defense Force. It's just like, what?
Now that's okay, but if his history had been, say, serving with, I don't know,
the Quds Force.
Yeah. He wouldn't be mayor of Chicago now, would he?
Right. No. It's really. I mean, it's that's why I always say it's just all about power. You know, it's nothing else. You talk about stuff like that. But anyway. Yeah, I mainly wanted to, use the Skype because it's great fun, but I'll move along and let someone else use the Skype.
No worries, Sandra. Thanks so much. Really great to hear from you.
Right. Take care.
All right. Take care. And that was the awesome Sandra. I was waiting for that. All right. We're going to take a little break, a little music, a little bit of ad break, and come back and start hour two, I guess a little bit late, but that's cool. So, all right. Email comes in to John at headonradionetwork.com. The phone numbers are in Australia, 02-8003-6934. In the United States, 347-903-6935. You're listening to the Head On Radio Network. You're listening to Head On with Bob Kincaid, and when I can find my music... Little Bob Marley. You're listening to The Horn. Head on RadioNetwork.com. We'll be back
get
after
up,
this.
Stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up. Stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up. Stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up. Stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Fresh in your face. It's good. That wind can change the world. And that change begins in Appalachia. Go to coalriverwind.org. Making America green begins in the hills of Appalachia. We can change America with the Coal River Wind Project. We can't do it without you. coalriverwind.org. Go there for yourself, for the future. coalriverwind.org.
Welcome to a Bubble Genius.
Hi, I'm trying to find a Valentine present for my boyfriend that's not too cutesy. Can you help?
I can show you sexy time.
Okay then. I'm just gonna... I thought this was Bath and Body, not...
Here is a sexy time.
Wow, edible massage oil and powder. Oh, its name is Sexy Time.
Sexy Time!
My boyfriend's gonna love this.
And Sexy Time for you, too.
Sexy Time for me, too.
BubbleGenius.com. Sexy Time.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Hour two of Head On with Bob Kincaid. But I ain't Bob. I'm John, and I'm in Australia. Turned out to be a bit of a warm day out here today. It's been had a weird summer. Been kind of not so hot yet. Really wet. Just means February's going to be hell. And I thought August in New Jersey was something horrible. Again, I think if I saw snow now, I'd run screaming. Anyway, folks, welcome back to Head On with Bob Kincaid. I'm hoping to hear from Bob at some point here in the proceedings, but as always happens, when I guest this show, it's time for that moment. We bring David Fremaine on, our pop culture correspondent. How you going, David? David? Hello, David. David. Thought I had him. Where'd he go? Lost him. Bugger. And here he comes again. Okay, let's try this again. We working this time there, David. David. Dave. Hello, Dave. This is very strange. David? I'm not getting any audio from you, buddy. Not sure what's going on. All right, see if David can figure out what's going on there on his end. Not sure what's going on there. I won't even repeat what's going on in the chat room at the moment. But anyway, if you're not in there, you should get in there. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com/chat room. The front door is fixed, in case you didn't know. It was broken for a while. Everybody had to come sliding in through the back. And, you know. Waiting on a message from David here to see what's going on with his deal. It's really weird. Phones have been perfect so far. So, anyway. What else did I have lined up here? One more time. Let's try it. David. You got me? Dave, Dave, Dave. Dave, Dave, Dave. Dave, Dave, Dave. And that seems to be a lost one. Don't know what's going on there, buddy. Anyway. We'll keep trying. Someone else want to try and ring in and see if we've got suddenly a Skype problem? But anyway, it's a few things. Weird things I've noticed lately. One of them is one of the pirated streams of MSNBC that's on the web that I watch because, well, I couldn't get it here if I wanted to anyway. I'm in Australia. Glenn Beck has bought ad space with cable companies during NBC programs. And every time one of these ads comes on, I have to laugh. I sit there thinking, really? Is this guy so fucking lost up his own ass that he thinks he's going to be able to siphon MSNBC viewers? Or is it a thing where he's just trying to get the opposite side to get his hit numbers up to go there for some, you know, pre-programmed outrage. But I just, and it's been fairly regular. Whoever at one of these sites is restreaming MSNBC from somewhere in the States, there's Glenn Beck ads, him hucking to try and get viewers. And I just think that's just amazing. And another thing that Betsy sent me earlier that just made my, I don't know, irony
alarms go off like you wouldn't believe. Was a comment from Sarah Palin. I know, I hate even... But this just... This killed me. Newt, Palin will play a major role in my administration. Okay. If that didn't make you be shit scared of a Newt Gingrich presidency, be scared shitless now. In an interview with Wolf Blitzer that will air today, or would have just aired a little while ago, Newt told Wolf he will ask Sarah Palin to play a major role in his administration if elected president. Gingrich's marks come a day after the former Alaska governor and vice presidential candidate made waves by offering a quasi-endorsement of Gingrich on Fox News. But here's the thing. Palin recently said she was unsure whether her endorsement would actually help any candidates at the moment, which may help explain her slightly unconventional fist bump for Newt. She explained it further this way. Get ready for this. I want more debates, more vetting of candidates, because we know the mistake in our country 4 years ago with having a candidate that was not vetted to the degree that he should have been. That he should have been! Welcome to the program. Who we got?
I had to go old school.
Oh, okay. That was really weird. Well, I'm glad we got you anyway, man. Just as you were ringing back in, I was just reading this little thing. You know, Newt is saying he's going to have Palin in his administration, right? And get this statement that she actually made. I want more debates, more vetting of candidates, because we know the mistake made in our country 4 years ago with having a candidate that was not yet vetted to the degree that he should have been.
Yeah, you know, that goes into what Tom Hartman and how I've been saying that it's been too clean.
Well, but I mean, the idea that she's saying that Barack wasn't vetted and she is the most unvetted ever federal candidate that's ever been foisted on the United States.
Yeah, it's obviously that she can pull it on the 2% that come out to see her, or the 1%, or, no pun intended, the 1% do come out to see Sarah Palin.
They do.
Yeah, I mean, the poorest 1%. I don't know, it's hard to gauge what's happening exactly, in this election, but I think, more so as we look at, for example, what I told Bob about, when Newt Gingrich, why was Newt Gingrich getting all this coverage? Like, he would call on, the right wing Rolodex, and he'd call up Howie Carr, and Howie Carr is infamously in the tank for Mitt Romney. So why would he let him on? And if you look at what's happening right now, it's the fact is that they're putting all these, they're giving him all these attacks, and what Sarah's saying has a bit of truth to it. It's an inoculation process. Because here's the thing, John. If they keep talking about bank capital right now, Newt Romney. I mean, but later on down the line, Mitt Romney can basically say, guys, this bank capital stuff, we've discussed this. And besides, Obama just appointed someone in the White House, in his administration, at the Operation Budget Management, which was Jeffrey Gantz yesterday. So you see, it all ties together. It's all connected in a way where they're beating this over the head. So, and this is, and a lot of people are saying this now. They're beating this over in the head. So the media is going to get tired of it, and they will get tired of it. Ladies and gentlemen, they will get tired of talking about class warfare if you're going to hear about it nonstop.
Yeah,
they'll say, you know what? This is sickening. Let's stop this, because all we're doing they'll use that old tactic where they say, it's just raising the rhetoric. You're just raising the rhetoric. You're just causing up a storm. You're playing politics. That old line, playing politics. When politicians are being political, that's not playing politics. That's doing your fucking job.
Your whole inoculation vibe, I think you're spot on with that. They'll just hammer it.
But here's the thing I think that's going on. I look at it the whole what's happening right now. If you look at it and you say, do they really want Mitt Romney to win? Maybe not. Maybe they do. Maybe some do. Maybe there's an infighting thing. But they do want that close margin, John. They want that close margin.
Oh, close margin is the easy way to steal it. You need a close margin to be able to steal it subtly.
I mean, but even if they don't steal it, they don't like Mitt Romney anyway. So if they don't succeed at stealing, they'll just be like, well, we tried, buddy. Now go back to Planet Colab.
I'm telling you, man, I'm watching what's going on in the States just kind of generally, especially on social stuff.
Yeah.
All this dog whistle racist stuff, and you know, the fact that I'm seeing Andrea Mitchell doing a promo for MSNBC where she's talking about how women should be judged on their merits, and I'm like, oh, what the fuck is this, 1975?
You know what's crazy? If you look what's happening in politics and how we're discussing politics, now you have a lot of Obama supporters rallying around Andrew Sullivan because he says why the right wing is dumb and the left wing doesn't get it. That Newsweek article he did.
Yeah.
About how taking the long view.
Plan.
But here's the thing about it. Here's the thing. It doesn't make sense. This is what's happening, though. I call it pragmatic chic that's happening right now. Well, on the Internet, a lot of people are siding with whatever Obama and the White House do, who are basically, well, let's say it, in a tank for Obama and the Obama administration and everything that they do, and they just pass the buck. They say, well, we can't be too left-wing. Meanwhile, John, meanwhile, the right-wing can be as right-wing as they goddamn please.
Any way they want. Absolutely. We can't be too left-wing.
Any way they want. But here's the thing about it. Here's the thing. When you look at something like that, you're not seeing that on. They're not going to play that on they're not going to play that on the radio. They're not going to play that on all the networks and the stations. So you don't hear about that. You only hear about these little incidents, these little tiffs that somehow. Oh, there we go, another radical Democrat. They play the witch noises when Nancy Pelosi flying on her broom. All that kind of bullshit on the radio.
Speaking of Pelosi's, you saw Real Time last weekend, didn't you?
Yeah.
With Nancy's daughter on there?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that, because, you know, they got into the whole discussion about the super PAC thing, and they were discussing Colbert's very interesting bit of political theater that he's doing at the moment. And, you know, I thought her little line where she said, I find it really precious that now the right wing screaming about super PACs when one of the first super PACs ever created spent millions of dollars to sully my family name.
Right. And you look over to the side and the right winger couldn't say anything.
Absolutely. And I was sitting there looking at him like going, wow, man, I think I'm looking at what I'm probably seeing very much what Nancy was probably like when, you know, 20 something years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's the case, I can see why she did well. Because the way she came off, that kind of, you know, don't even try and stand in my way kind of attitude. I kind of dig that. And no matter how, you know, I got problems with Nancy and stuff that she did during the Bush administration, but I still think she's one of the better bloody fighters we've got out there.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think we need more of that that fighting spirit that's happening. But like I said, there's so much pushback on not fighting the basic frame of not fighting. It has to be within these guidelines and these rules. Like the Obama administration diehard disciples tell you, this is how we fight. This is it right here. This is going to get us the best amount of support, and they really do think that if you're too loud, you're gonna tick off the people. But they still don't understand that the concentration of media is completely good for Obama, whether you like it or not.
Well, and the
you
whole
you can't control that.
And this whole idea that you know Yeah, protest, but don't inconvenience me. The whole point of a protest is to inconvenience people to draw attention to a situation. And it's just like suddenly, you know, one side can be as vitriolic and ugly and as loud and as armed and as threatening as they want to be. But as soon as the other side starts talking a little bit and actually picks up like a little megaphone and says, hey, look over here. Suddenly where, you know, the left is being violent and the this and the that and, oh, they're doing nothing but drugs over there at Occupy and da-da-da-da-da.
Well, speaking of Occupy, I got into a discussion or a conversation with a lot of Obama diehard supporters about the whole issue of one of the protesters throwing a smoke bomb over the White House fence.
And like, that
see, this is how it happens. And my basic question to them was like, how do you know that this guy wasn't a hanger-on? How do you know this guy wasn't intoxicated? He's like, well,
how do you know this guy wasn't paid by somebody to go in and try and create a problem?
Yeah, or something to that effect. I took more of the road of that this guy was like a hanger-on. He did something stupid, and it doesn't represent anyone out there protesting. But they still wanted to hammer on and on and on. They say, well, this is a stupid way to protest. And then they kept saying about how the discussion came about how Michael Moore and how his incendiary tone to the president was too vocal. And so basically what you see is you just see a lot of people who are really, really sensitive in the department of criticism of a president where it's their guy in office, which is too bad. But it's really, really predictable in that sense.
Oh, yeah. And you'd almost hope that people who are supporters would be almost more critical of their own when they're in. Because you expect better of them. And, again, it's just kind of like, you know, I've said it before, opposite world. I really, more and more every single day, watching just the dialogue that goes on in America, not us, but,
right,
you know, in general, where, you know, the food stamp president thing, you know, the fact that some old pasty white fucker can go up there and when everyone knows that no president has ever put a person on food stamps. And then to use this kind of language, you know, more people have been put on food stamps by this president. By this president? I accepted food stamps once in my life for like about 6 weeks. Long
right.
time ago. And I'm telling you, it's not a fun thing. It's not a proud moment. It's not a happy time when you go in there with the little tickets, because this is before they had the card thingy.
Right, right.
And, you know, it was always a bit of a production because you could only get so much change and all that, and which is for obvious reasons. But no one does that by choice. That is not fun. That is shit. I have lived
it. Yeah, it's obvious that they made it that way. I mean, I remember standing in the line with someone who had multiple different versions of food stamps. It looked like a goddamn game of Tetris, for God's sake. So I was like, holy shit. It's like, we're going to be here a while.
And you know, I worked, and this just shows kind of like even way back in the 90s how just kind of they make these systems unworkable. You know, I worked at a convenience store. And you'd have people wanting to come in with the $5 food stamp to buy a 99-cent candy to try and get the change, which was to probably put gas in the car so maybe they could go find a job. But because all they could get was the food stamps, and there might not be any other income, it forces people to try and pull these little borderline scams and whatnot. Not really scams, but, you know, playing within the letter of the law. To get the buck or two that they need to maybe go to the job interview. So, like, this whole idea that people put on food stamps and they're, like, living this fucking high life is just insane.
Well, you know, it's amazing the insignificant stories that completely saturate the media and who and then the culprits who put it out. You look at people like Matt Drudge, who's basically, let's get it straight, people, the national editor for all media in this country, goes through somebody like Matt Drudge. They even said that the campaign, I think one of the members of Mitt Romney's staff is close in with Matt Drudge. So it all makes sense. It's all connected. It's all tied together in a way where they can put out these headlines that basically bend things a certain way, where you're constantly focused on the same story of the week over and over again. And you look at something like here's the other thing. I was listening to a lot of progressives talk about how, oh, we really, really got James O'Keefe, and they were talking about he's going to go to jail. And I thought for a second, you know what? I'm just going to listen to a James O'Keefe speech. So I listened to one of these speeches that he gave to Project Veritas. And here he is talking, John. He's giving the whole game plan. And this is the thing that a lot of progressives and liberals, they don't understand. They don't – if you listen to these speeches, it's the same way with Jack Abramoff in the 80s when he was in the college Republicans, the young college Republicans. They were giving you the game plan right there. They give you the game plan all the time. It's just that nobody really picks up on it. And here he was talking, and in the middle of the speech he says, you know – I'm really waiting for me to get arrested. I want to get arrested because I know. And then he just basically spelled out what would happen after he got arrested. And that's exactly what they want. They want somebody like James O'Keefe to get arrested. So if you keep putting him on the story and saying, oh, look at this guy, look at this guy, he needs to apologize or he needs to be taken to court in all of this aspect. But the truth is that this guy – and the way he set up his organization and the way it's funded through all this right-wing cartel, he wants to get arrested because guess what, people? They've been paying attention to the same tactics that's been happening in the streets with the liberals. They've been studying it. They understand the concept of arresting. Arresting and being charged. They understand that now. And that's what's happening, John. You're going to see a lot more right-wingers get arrested, a lot more of these organizers.
That'd be interesting, because there is actually someone has actually filed some charges against O'Keefe, I think. I saw some piece floating around.
I think it's in procedure right now, but if they show him with the handcuffs and all of that, he's going to be like, to me, this is all a setup it's a setup and a trap. He's going to be seen as a martyr. O'Keefe is a digital Lee Atwater. That's what he is. They want that picture like, oh, my God, do you see what O'Keefe is doing for our country?
Right.
And it's so obvious when you look at the connections of what happened. And here's the other thing nobody pays attention to. These projects that they're putting together, they're making them more, and this is what I said before, the Democrats cannot guarantee, there will be no guarantee in the future, John, of a completely white conservative media. It's going completely multicultural. He hired people from Nigeria. They know what they're doing. What they're doing. They hire all these people around the country from all different walks of life, and they say, all right, everybody, let's get together on this operation, and let's do something about voter fraud. Meanwhile, I'm not talking about the issue of voting machines, the privatized corporations, just the fact of dead people on a voter roll.
In fact, they've been doing a lot of covering that in the GOP debates.
Right, that's the other thing.
Rick, I can't remember my ass from my head, Perry. You know, he was doing that. He did that thing. We are at war with this federal government in Texas, and so is South Carolina, and he went through and the list of, not saying what they were at war over, but you just go and go, okay, what are those states dealing with? Oh yeah, bullshit, fucking investigations on voter fraud that doesn't exist.
But you see, John, here's the other thing. When you look at distractions like this, distraction after distraction, distraction after that like that, you have to look to the side and see the concentration of power that's happening right now with all the businesses and corporations in this country that are lining up and they're getting ready for that great vacuum where something happens in this country that's ominous, where everything just goes black for a day or whatever. And everything goes into total chaos, and they'll have everything lined up. All the right-wing religious organizations, all of the right-wing corporatists, the free marketists, they're all basically, they're just waiting for that day because they have like that concentration of media. And this is what I say to progressives all the time. I say, you don't have that concentration of media. The fact that people are paying attention to the whole election in the sense that all of these candidates, and they keep looking at them and they say, oh, did you see what Newt Gingrich said? Oh, did you see? And it's that's all they talk about it. You look at that and you say to yourself, okay, what is really going on here? And you look at what's happening in this country, and you look at who's buying up all the property, and I talked about this before. If you watch a movie like Blue Gold, you can see who's buying all the watersheds around the world. The Bush family. You know? This is all designed. All of this is designed is one giant digital distraction. One giant theatrical distraction. Just one after the other. Put all the crazy tunes. Who cares if they crash and burn? Because they know in the next 4 years people are going to be sick of Democrats.
Well, you know,
they know it.
I agree with you, and the media consolidation thing is so much one of the core issues of this. And you know, we go back to 4 years ago when we first took on the term of that. You know, these weren't primaries or debates or anything; they were pageants. They were being paraded around. The producers have already decided who the winner is going to be before the whole thing even started. So, you know, like just, you know, in the Democratic primary, you know, all the debates, you know, I did that whole thing where I said, look at the stage management. Look at the way that they're pointing the imaging. You know, when there were 13 of them, there were the four in the middle. And the less you were supposed to be seen, the more you were put on the outskirts. Camera angles cut you out of the picture. We edit you out of debate photos in the newspaper websites. So now watching it on this side, you know, now that the Republicans are going through it, because it happened last time, so now the parade's on that side, it all seems so much more obvious and worse in a way, but it's the same exact thing. Barack Obama was the chosen one last time. The media had chosen him. Hillary Clinton wasn't interesting enough. Barack Obama was going to make for a lot better TV over 4 or 8 years, too. You know? Because everybody knew as soon as we got Barack Obama in office, all the pasty white fuckers that need to die were going to go shit crazy. And they have. Even worse than I ever dreamed.
Well, if you look at what happened recently with the whole Michelle Obama when she came out to the media and she said, now look, everybody, I'm not an angry black woman. They always get the progressives to come out there and get so goddamn scared that they have to say, I'm not this person, I'm not that person. And that's all part of the game.
Absolutely.
To get someone out there to get the – did you ever – John, did you ever see the First Lady, Laura Bush, say – you know, or did you ever hear say any Republican First Lady ever say, you know, I'm not an angry person. I'm a very calm individual. He never had to.
No.
Because the constant hammering of the media perceptions were just going on and on, and the fact that we are so outnumbered where it concerns media really should be alarming to a lot of people, and they still don't understand. I sent like a bunch of tweet messages to David Axelrod, and I said, you understand the fact that nobody is giving progressives and liberals the money that it takes to build the infrastructure, what that means for the future, don't you? And then I just sent one after the other, like four or five different ones, and I said, basically, no one's putting up the money, so what do you think is going to happen?
Sorry, say that again. I was just actually getting. I thought someone was. It was a prediction as opposed to a result. Someone had put in the chat room that Newt won the South Carolina primary, and I was like, "What?" Sorry, I got distracted. You just asked me a question. I was really bad and fucking vagued out on something else.
Basically, what I was just saying was I was talking about how I had sent some tweets to. David Axelrod, and I was telling him about how the infrastructure is so outnumbered where it concerns progressives and Republicans. And my basic point to him was that what do you think is going to happen in the future if nobody properly invests in progressive infrastructure and liberal infrastructure all around the country. What do you think is going to happen in the future? And obviously he wouldn't answer. But the main point is that nobody's preparing in that sense. Nobody is preparing. You have a place like the Horn, and that's great. But here's the reality. The reality is that you have so much right-wing propaganda invading everywhere. You get the restaurants, all the chain restaurants, all the malls. You look on the TV. You look on the sports channels. It's everywhere in such subliminal ways. You can't imagine it. You'd be like, oh, it's here, it's here, it's there, it's there. And the fact that it's infiltrated so much and it's so imbalanced, that makes it for a really, really dangerous premise right around the corner, basically.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and I mean, I keep having flashbacks to when I was a kid growing up, you know, when we still had the Fairness Doctrine, you know, and there would be that little spot, you know, like after the news where there would be like an op-ed rebuttal. You know, and so if you know, the news local newscaster did an op-ed piece, people could write in saying that they had a counter argument, and then time had to be made for that counter argument to be broadcast.
Mm-hmm.
And this happened like every night, I think, from memory. I mean, we're talking this, you know, 70s, because that went away with Reagan, and those things were the idea that the money's always going to be to one side.
Right.
So you have to have some, I know it's a dirty word for right-wingers, but some regulation. Because these people are using our airspace and our space under the ground to run all their cabling. So, you know, there has to be some, but they got this all removed between Reagan and Clinton getting talked into the cross-ownership rewrites. All that's gone.
And if you really want to be honest about it, it's a type of media subsidy system set up for
everyone. Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And all this SIP, you know, SOPA and PIPA crap, this is just a further extension of the same. Just trying to consolidate control more because, God fucking forbid, the people have some power at the moment. We got to end that.
Well, you know, it's interesting you bring that up because Jack Abrahoff recently did a lecture seminar with this professor in Washington, Professor Lipsick, and he was talking about how a lot of people don't know how central Washington works, and he was basically explaining that it's not some ominous cabal and how I got corrupted and how everyone got corrupted. His basic point was that day after day you're working there, You are so immersed in this lifestyle that pretty soon you have no idea of what a real moral reality is. And basically, I mean, this is where I stand on Obama. A lot of people say, oh, I can't believe he sold us out. I can't believe he's corrupt. I don't look at it that way. I look at it as this way. Here you have somebody who's moved into the Beltway. He's completely immersed there 24/7. If somebody comes at you, this is the way I would put it, John. If somebody comes to you day after day and tells you to do something, they know, it's like the Robert Greene's rules of power. They know that you're not going to do it, but they know there is a good chance eventually that you'll be moved in that position if you keep saying it day after day after day.
Hey, man, you know, Howard Stern proved that whole thing. Tell a lie enough times, it becomes the truth, you know? That whole, because in the rejection, in reaction to the whole Michael Jackson, king of pop, and so, you know, he said, I'll be Howard Stern, king of all media.
And also the way I would put it is it's kind of like almost like a rat posse syndrome, where you're in a rat posse, where you're in a group of MCs, and suddenly you get in a beef with someone, or suddenly you're put into a direction of in a position that you don't want to be in, but everyone around you is slowly moving you into that position, and sooner or later you are completely affiliated, completely connected, and there's nothing you can do about it.
Well,
so you're completely immersed in that world now.
I was kind of starting to head in this same direction, you know, when I was saying, you know, I had no false preconceived notions that Obama was anything but a centrist. And, but I do actually think, you know, he's got a bit more of a humane strain than, say, George W. Bush. And actually does have a brain, you know, that functions and can take new information in. But he still going in there as the youngest president ever, not that that's necessarily a strike, but he hadn't been immersed in this that long. And you'd think that could be a benefit. But once you get in there, you know, it's, we talked about this after the election, you know, so you're going, oh, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. Ha, you know, here you go. Now you're the president. Okay, sir, please come into this room. We're going to tell you how it all really works.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I was listening to a conservative radio host. And he was talking about how he was running for Congress. And immediately when he went to Washington, what they do is they have these coaching sessions. And basically the guy who was his congressman at the time, Congressman J.C. Watts, he basically said to the to the potential candidate, he said, you know what, this is the way it works. You will be my bitch. And what I say, and keep in mind, this was a, what makes J.C. Watts interesting is he's a black Republican. So he's saying this to this really white New York candidate. He's saying, you will be my bitch, and this is how it will work. And this is what I want you to vote for, and this is how the system works. And so basically that's how it happens. And I think the biggest problem is that so many liberals and so many progressives think that there's like this switch that you can just turn on and instantly, okay, if you become progressive, everyone become progressive, instantly everyone in Washington, D.C. is progressive, and suddenly everything is going to work out just fine. You have to deal. See, this is the problem where a lot of people don't understand. You have to deal with that population that isn't on your level. Will never be on your mental level.
Absolutely.
Never be able to understand any critical thinking, analysis, logical reasoning, nothing.
They're never going to understand you on a socioeconomic level, and that is the biggest fucking disconnect with all these people. You know, Romney going, you know, I didn't make very much from speaking. $380,000, seven times the average salary of any American, didn't make much.
It is something when you look at the whole totality of everything that's happening right now, and the fact that so many people think that, okay, if we just become this way and we just do this, when you have a system like this in place, and to me, this is why it's important to start blueprinting for a third-party option. In the long-term future, of course, but when people start to shoot it down, you know, it's the same way they shot down the whole the whole solar panels for everyone, for every home in America.
Yeah. Ah.
Or wind energy or something to that effect. You can't be that way. You have to look at it and say, okay, I'm going to get ridiculed. I'm going to get constantly, you know, rake through the fire, so to speak, but I have to stay on this track. And that's what I like about somebody like you were talking about, and I listened to an interview with about 2 weeks ago with Rocky Anderson, the Justice Party.
I've got the text of that, and I was reading it, and I want to talk to Rocky again. We talked to him years ago, and I want to talk to him again. I really do.
Well, you know, that to me is the guy that we should be talking about, not Ron Paul, not Buddy Romer.
Yeah.
I want to talk to somebody who says, you know what? I know this is probably a really controversial position to take, but I'm not going to be with either party, and this is my platform, and this is what I hope, and this is what I stand for, and this is why I do this, and I can get on board with that. But I understand the political reality now, and I understand that it probably won't be like that for God knows how many years.
Well, and I
probably till I'm tombstone.
And from what I'm picking up, though, Rocky, the party's been putting its applications, but he's not deeming himself their nominee. He's just putting himself up for the nomination, which I think is, even if it's just, you know, kind of kabuki theater, It's saying, you know, it's not like it's not like Lieberman when, you know, he lost as a Democrat, became an independent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is kind of like a totally different thing where it's like, okay, this is I say, you know, here's a new party idea on this platform. And looking for candidates. We are looking for candidates that, you know, agree with these principles.
Well, I'll tell you what, John, I'd like to see him on a show like, I know it'll probably never happen, because that's just the way the media elite works. I'd like to see him on a show like Bill Maher. I'd like to see him on a show like Chris Hayes,
Sitting
right down at the panel, eating some breakfast food with the panel, talking about the realities of the political landscape that we face in the near future. But one other thing I wanted to mention before I sign off was I wanted to get your opinion on this whole thing with I don't know if you heard about today it was announced that Mega Upload and UMG are having some serious friction now because of who the CEO is. And nobody really knew who the CEO is, and guess who it is?
Who?
It's Alicia Keys' husband, Swizz Beatz.
No
see,
shit.
Here's where it gets even crazier. The fact that, what happened is he made a video, which is so insane to me, the fact that you could be this oblivious to it and living in this type of world, is the fact that he made a video with Sean Diddy Combs, Kanye West, and Will.i.am, and all these people, even Alicia Keys, in a video promoting, get this, Mega Upload. And if you think about it, John, because I don't care what anyone says, Mega Upload is ground zero for illegal downloads.
Oh yeah,
that's where they make their business. And the fact that they're trying to they're turning over a new leaf, no, because if you look, everything where it includes movies, TV shows, singles, albums, you name it, all of the media on Mega Upload, they've made millions and millions and billions of dollars, possibly billions of dollars, just on this whole system. And I think a lot of people in the music industry, they understand that. So then now there's this friction with Universal Music Group and Mega Upload because Universal Music Group has issued those takedown issues.
Right.
So they say, this content is no longer available because of da-da-da-da-da.
DMCA.
And so what's happened is because Swizz Beatz has got all these people on board, He's put them in a type of quandary because basically, whether people want to admit it or not, Mega Upload is the perfect place to get the latest leak of an album or the latest leak of a movie or something like that, or a DVD screener. I mean, that's where they make their business. I hate when people say, no, it's because they're just sharing emails. They're sharing files. Get the hell out of here. They're sharing files. Mega Upload understands the business. They're in the pirate business. And a lot of the music industry is too. Because they understand the world of promotion. Here's how it works. They know a lot of people aren't going to buy that album. And they understand that. But here's what they do know. They do know because if you share it around enough, it builds a kind of intense buzz around it.
Absolutely.
And I was looking at, you know, here's the other thing. I was looking at like a mixtape site, and I was looking at who owns this mixtape site, and it goes back to a major corporation. So I'm thinking, all of these major corporations who are saying that they're quote-unquote indie, under the umbrella stealth, it's all connected in such a way where what they're saying about the pirated material and illegal downloads, and they want to stop that, to me that's bullshit. They've made so much money off that, it's ridiculous.
Well, mate, it just reminds me of before bloody Napster, even existed, when CDs first came out and the first recordable CDs happened, and you had Sony and Warner's and everybody else, and they're going, this is going to be a massive infringement. Oh, now they can make perfect digital copies, blah, 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 blah. Excuse me, Sony, you also sell the players, recorders, and the media that is being used, that you're claiming is being used for pirating. So they tried really hard. It kind of just popped in my head. They tried really hard to get a federal government excise tax put on blank CDs to cover the losses of imagined piracy. So, basically what Sony was being asked, was asking the federal government to do, was give them some extra money that would be collected by the U.S. government and given straight to the major labels as a corporate tax. No matter what I might have used that blank CD for. But that's what they wanted to do. And again, it all comes down to control and the hypocrisy of it. Like you said, making millions of downloads. Now you want to go and turn over a new leaf? Sorry, I don't buy it. Just like I haven't bought the whole downloads argument from the labels. I never have.
Yeah, I agree with that. And before I sign off, I do want to mention one particular thing in music that is of interest to me. And a lot of people should be checking this out, but I don't know if you're familiar with the have you heard of the Bullets and James Samuel?
I don't think so.
Okay. John, let me tell you something right now. James Samuel is doing something in music that a lot of people, it's like on five different levels. He has like a gorilla's approach to it where the whole multimedia interaction is with his videos and his characters, and he's doing this concept trilogy album where he's putting together a whole narrative, and Lucy Liu is actually narrating the albums, and they've been putting out these videos. You can type in Bullets, B-U-L-L-I-T-T-S, and if you type in Bullets, it'll come up. You'll see a video like the latest one is super cool, but the real interesting thing about it is how they have the visuals so down packed, and it's really varied music. And when I talk about you, it's rare to find somebody who's really excited about music and really arrogant at the same time, but he can back it up. And when you watch these interviews, you're like, yeah, right, your album's going to be all this and all that. Then he takes you to the studio sessions, and you see the string session, and you say, okay, and then he pulls out his guitar, and he pulls out his acoustic guitar. He's like, he's telling the interview, he's like, no, this is going to be a song on the album. This is going to be a song on the album. And he goes, I just want you to hear it. He's really, really excited, really pumped up. And then he plays her a new song on the interview. And it's like, the guy is amazing. I look at James Samuel as like the combination of The Clash. I'm putting some names out there, people. The Clash, Gorillaz, Saul Williams, Prince. Just go through the list. And he merges all these influences together, and he's such an amazing songwriter, producer, and arranger. And the way he puts everything together with all the... he has a lot of these collaborations lined up, too, which is also crazy. And a lot of people in... I guess what they really did was they built this serious underground buzzer, and they would release like a single every like 4 or 5 months, but they would tie it together with this crazy cinematic visual. So that's something that I think people should check for 2012 is the Bullets.
I will be
check
checking
out
that
James
out
Samuel. And you can, if you just type in the Bullets, B-U-L-L-I-T-T-S, you can check it out on YouTube and just be amazed for yourself to see how far this band is going to go. And if they do release an album this year, I mean, I'm telling you, John, I've seen a lot of talented artists and stuff, but the way he did the new video, he has a new video with Rosario Dawson, and it's almost kind of like a Spike Jones type of approach. Like in the beginning, he's all dressed up like, what he does is he stands right in front of, in an area in London, and he's all dressed up in these rags, and he's carrying his shopping cart, and there's this guy behind him, and he turns to him, he's like, listen, stop filming, you need to stop filming, and he's acting like a bum in front of all these people going, what the hell's going on, and then all of a sudden, right out of the blue, like they timed it, he meets Rosario Dawson, nobody knows who this actress is, because a lot of people in London, a lot of the people around there were kind of old and just not really in tune to the scene. But then, like, he starts playing the song and he starts dancing, and you can see, like, the reaction from everybody, like a panoramic view.
Awesome.
It's insane what James Samuel is doing. And the other thing, John, is he's backing up his musical ability on stage and festivals, like killing it after festival with his band on stage.
Hey, man,
it's just amazing to watch. Like, everything on all cylinders, John, like the talking, the media, the lyrics, the music, the vocals, the arrangements. It's just killer. I can't say enough about the Bullet.
I can tell, man. You're like almost breathless in the description. I know that feeling when. Once in a while, someone really, really, like, you go, wow, man, this actually stands above.
Well, here's the thing. See, this is what really got me. The fact that this guy was constantly bragging in interviews and constantly talking about the music. And then when he finally just opened the door and showed people and the people that he was working with and the musicians that he was working with. And when you see that string session, John, and when you see him, like, just mess with the levers and the way he's arranging it, you'll be going, oh, my God, this guy's vision, what he's seeing in his head, is coming exactly out with how he's planning it.
Hey, well.
It's amazing to watch because it's so rare to see that. It's so rare to see it on the video level, on the music level, and on the lyric level, and then to add the concept level. Fuck out of here, man. That's amazing in itself. You can't even. That's like lightning in a bottle times 10.
Very few can pull it off on all sides. And then,
yeah.
then the trick is if you do it once, can you do it again?
So that's what I'm going to side off with, ladies and gentlemen. I'm going to side off with check out James Samuel and the Bullets for 2012. The trilogy album should be happening pretty soon. And just check out some of the visuals. They call it they don't call it a mixtape. They call it a flicks tape. And you can look at some of the videos and just be amazed. I mean, the cinematography is just so on point. Whether sometimes they do like a black and white, like noir type feel, like a James Bondy type feel to it, and then a real gritty type street theater look.
Right.
Whoever's on their team, John. Let me put it to you this way: whoever is on their team knows what the hell they're doing, because they've planned this out and they coordinated it so they drop a video like every 4 months, and every time they have a single, they have an interesting video to go along with it.
Yeah,
and the way they promote it is just amazing.
It sounds like they're doing some really good planning and having to get things to go viral. With that, man, I'm going to have to cut you off. We're going to take a top of the hour break, but always good, man. And we've got something coming to the horn soon, but we're not really going to tell any more than that, though. We got.
Yeah, we'll have to crossfade into a break right now.
Yeah. Let's do that. So anyway. Thanks, David. We'll talk to you next time, man. Always good.
All right, John. Later.
All right, buddy. Okay, folks. We're going to take a quick break. I'm going to get something to drink and, you know what to do. Get on the line. The line is open. You're listening to Head On with Bob Kincaid. John Fox filling in today. Bob and the whole crew, Guy, Rick, everybody. Be broadcasting from D.C. tomorrow. Maybe we might hear from Bob in this last hour. So here we go. Some Michael Ferranti, Stay Human.
We feel alone like a tree in the desert, dried up like the skin of a lizard. We're full of color like the spots of a leopard. Drum and bass pull me in like a shepherd. Scratch my itch like a needle on the record. Full of life like a man going to Mecca. Sky high like an eagle up soaring. I speak low, but I'm like a lion roaring. Baritone like a Robeson recording. I'm giving thanks for being human every morning. Because the streets are alive with the sound of boom bap. Can I hear it once again? Boom bap. Tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. The streets are alive with the sound of boom bap. Can I hear it once again? Boom, bop, but tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. Be resistant the negativity, we keep it at a distance. Call for backup and I'll give you some assistance. Like a lifesaver deep in the ocean. Stay afloat here upon the funky motion. Rock and roll upon the waves of the season. Hold your breath and you're underwater breathing. To be rhyming without a real reason is to claim it, not to practice a religion. If television is the drug of the nation, satellite is immaculate reception. Beaming in, they can look and they can listen. So you see, don't believe in the system. To legalize you or give you your freedom. You want rights? Ask them to read them.
But every flower got a right to be blooming. Stay human, because the streets are alive with the sound of boom bap. Can I hear it once again? Boom bap. But tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. The streets are alive with the sound of boom bap. But can I hear it once again? Boom bap. But tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. Because all the freaky people make the beauty of the world. All the freaky people make the beauty of the world. All the freaky people make the beauty of the world. All the freaky people make the beauty of the world. Because all the freaky people make the beauty of the world. Aha. Well, you saw the freaky people make the beauty of the world. Stay human. You see why 2K and 2 is a moment in time we find that we can open up a heart that's locked or been broken by the pain of words not spoken, nor shot by guns are still smoking. Cartwrights out on the Ponderosa, or drive by Fang and Testarossa. We need to hear the words of Dalai Lama, or at least the words of your mama. Take a mental trip to the Bahamas. Steam your body in the stereo sauna, sauna, comma. Because the streets are alive with the sound of boom bap. But can I hear it once again? Boom bap. But tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. The streets are alive with the sound of boom bap. But can I hear it once again? Boom bap. But tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. The streets are alive with the sound of boom bap. But can I hear it once again? Boom bap. But tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. The streets are alive with the sound of boom bap. But can I hear it once again? Boom bap. But tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. Because all the freaky people make the beauty of the world. All the freaky people make the beauty of the world. All the freaky people make the beauty of the world. All the freaky people make the beauty of the world. All the freaky people make the beauty of the world. Ha 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 ha. Because all the freaky people make the beauty of the world.
You can't always get a clean you can feel good about inside and out unless you're using Bubble Genius Bath and Body Products. See, Bubble Genius is a woman-owned small business proudly creating our vegan-friendly products in America and supporting other U.S. businesses by buying our ingredients and supplies from them as often as possible. Plus, you'll be hard-pressed to find packaging as recyclable as ours. Visit BubbleGenius.com and check out our cause-related items, too, like our global warming soap and a lot more. We donate our proceeds for those items to worthy causes, like organizations combating climate change and mountaintop removal mining. Good stuff like that. We also send our products to the troops overseas through our Buy a Soldier a Shower campaign. Because the least we can do is keep them smiling and smelling great, right? So visit BubbleGenius.com and feel good and clean. Bubble Genius. Doing our part to make the world a better place, one bathtub at a time. That's BubbleGenius.com.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Bob.
Unless you just tuned in, you know it ain't Bob today. Welcome back to Head On with Bob Kincaid. This is John Fox filling in for the man while he's getting set up in D.C. with the rest of the team. And Guy James, I haven't heard Guy in so long. I'm looking forward to that. But to have all those guys in one place, it's going to be good fun. So, you know, I think it's like 9 hours of broadcasting we're doing tomorrow. And then, you know, kind of reminding me of way back in the early days. I remember when we did something like 13 hours of live programming a day during the week at one stage. Anyway. Let's go to the phones, and I believe we have Cassie. Hey, Cass, how are you?
Hey, John Fox, how are you?
I'm doing really, really well. You in Texas, or are you in Jersey at the moment?
Oh, I'm in Jersey. I've been back for about 2 weeks ago.
Right on, right on. How's life at uni treating you?
It's good. It's really good.
Excellent, excellent. Yeah. Gee, seems like ages since I've heard your voice.
Well, I call Bob once in a while.
I've been unfortunately a bit off the planet as far as that's concerned. I've been on the road a lot, so only like the last few weeks have I actually got to tune into the bloody shows. So, you know, I haven't heard you, unfortunately.
And how many shows tomorrow?
Ah, they're doing
9 shows.
9 hours, I think, of broadcasting they're doing tomorrow. So there'll be Rick's show, Bob's show, plus Guy James is down there with them.
I remember Guy James.
Yeah, I miss Guy. He's great. And this is one of those. I think this is one of those events that Guy did every year before Guy was ever part of the Horn, and we kind of dovetailed onto it, and now we're there and being like, "Hey, Guy," because it's just become really hard, you know, as is the case with all of us. When you're paying to broadcast yourself, it can sometimes get to be a little bit too difficult, and it got that way for Guy. But I'm glad that he's going to be with the boys in D.C. But you rang. What's up?
So, do you have a topic, or can I?
I've been going off on the whole blackout the internet day kind of thing and that kind of vibe, but bring whatever you've got.
Okay, so I want to talk about primary elections.
Okay.
And why is it that only, like, the media decided a year ago that Mitt Romney was the front runner before they ever asked anybody in any state?
That's right.
And now we've had one state half vote and one state completely vote. And the rest of the states haven't said anything. And now half of them are declaring it over. And, like, where is democracy?
We're supposed to, like, be, at least.
Are we supposed to? No, but where is it? I mean, like, are we all supposed to move to Iowa if we want to really vote? I mean, like, I don't understand any of it.
I tell you, see, Cass, you still look at the world in a beautifully...
Don't you dare say naive.
No. That's not what I'm going to say. No, not even. No, that's why I was trying to think to choose my words carefully.
Because you know I'll really
No. You expect the world, and rightly so, to act in a logical fashion. In other words, you think 2 and 2 should equal 4. But, unfortunately, that's not... We think that that's the system that's going on, or that's the impression that they try to give us, but it does appear that, you know, the whole pre-selection process is done behind closed doors. It is done by the media, and it is done by those who can throw lots of money around. And so if it ends up that, you know, we end up having two groups of people or one group of people basically decide who the two candidates are going to be, and then we get to choose between those two people that we didn't pick in the first place.
Right.
And this is, like, I've been screaming for years that, you know, if you're going to have primaries, all the states should have all their primaries at the same time on the same day.
Yeah.
Everybody does it at the same time. Because this whole thing, like, Iowa, why Iowa? You know, half my family's from Iowa. Bunch of Southern Baptist corn huskers. Right? But Iowa used to be really important because of all the corn and ethanol subsidies. Those have been cut. So Iowa's importance in real terms actually has dropped considerably. But for some reason, this state with very few people believes that it should be able to strong arm the rest of the process. And I've never understood this either. I've never understood why, you know,
New Hampshire will fit in my back pocket.
Yeah, and you know, for the Democrats, it is places like New Hampshire and whatnot that they have to, you know, once they've won that, it seems like they've won the whole thing. And you say, but that's not the whole country.
Right, but some of us don't get to vote.
And this is also true.
Like, last time I couldn't vote because I didn't turn 18 until November. And so I couldn't vote. Like, I missed some of the voting. But
right.
No, that wasn't the presidential. That was the governor
meeting. That was the midterms.
That was the governor, yeah.
Yeah.
But now, like, I don't think we're till March. I don't think I get to vote until March.
Is there a residence kind of, because I know they've been playing games with some of the stuff with college students and whatnot.
I have to vote in Texas.
You have to vote in Texas. So
I don't have a year-round lease.
Right. So you have to do it via absentee in Texas because that's where you actually reside.
Well, I practically have to vote as homeless in Texas because I don't have a residence there either.
Oh,
but
geez.
I do have some, well, because I don't.
Well, it's similar to me. I vote in California.
I don't have anybody there. My family has dwindled a little bit since we talked.
Well, dwindled.
Dwindled.
Yeah, okay.
You know, but I do have somebody who's letting me use their address.
Right. Well, but, I mean, I still absentee vote in the United States, and because my last address was in California, that's where I still vote from. So, you know, I mean, it still ends up being that same kind of, it's similar idea.
I may be one of those people they're trying to prosecute, because I have to check that that's my legal residency, and the fact is I'm there for 1 week a year. But I have to check the box and sign my name that it's my legal residence.
Well, I think if you're only claiming one is at a residence, they really can't. I mean, I'm no lawyer, but as long as you're not claiming residence in both, I don't think they can really go you.
But again, this
is one of those things. Many states, they're playing games with these laws, especially the Republicans, because they know that young people
don't want college students to vote.
Absolutely.
Democratic, so they want to get them out of their state.
Yep. Absolutely. I totally, that was such an obvious thing that they were trying to do. And it's, you know, like everything else they do is completely shocking. But, you know, as you were talking about, though, like, with why does Iowa have this prominence of place? This is a question I have asked, and I know a lot of other people I know have been asking for years. You know, I have family that comes from there, so they're all like, yep, we decide who the next nominee is going to be. And even when I was a kid, before I, you know, when I was still kind of like going, yep, whatever you say, it still didn't add up.
Yeah.
You know, I kept going,
it doesn't.
Why?
And then the other thing that doesn't add up is everybody's talking about how, you know, Mitt Romney had to win New Hampshire because he's from Massachusetts.
Yeah.
Okay. So why do people vote for the person from their state? And why do they vote for the person from the next state? I mean, did George Bush do anything for Texas when he was president?
No.
Anything good?
But it's familiarity. And especially with Republicans, you know, they're fairly lockstep people, you know, so...
So it's just the name they've heard the longest and the accent that they're the most familiar with?
Yeah, I reckon so. Not to be overly stereotypical, but, you know, conservative right-wing people don't like things that are different. I mean, we know this. You know, gay people, you know, they don't like anything that's different. And so, you know, saying earlier to Susan when she rang me in the beginning of the program that I swear from over here the United States looks as though it's living some sort of Margaret Atwood novel. You've read A Handmaid's Tale, right?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So and you know, there's this one promo on MSNBC that I like. I cannot believe I'm seeing this in 2012. There is an internal MSNBC promo with Andrea Mitchell basically having to do a thing saying, I'm a female reporter and I should be judged on my ability. And I'm going, is this still 1975? When did we time warp back to when we...
Well, how are they judging her?
Well, but it's like she felt like she had to make an ad.
Oh, I know why.
You know what I mean?
I know why, because all of the Fox ones are dumb blondes.
Oh, maybe that's it. Okay, see. When you get away from the white male perspective, you might see something different. Okay.
Because they're interchangeable old dumb white, dumb blonde with the, you know, skinny dumb blonde.
Yeah, this very, you're not wrong there. You're not wrong there. And I don't think a lot of them are actually dumb. I think they play dumb because that's what the formula is over there. I mean, there's that one, I can't remember her name, but, I mean, there's videos of her when she was like I can't remember which one it is, when she was like kind of like a beauty pageant kind of, you know, contestant kind of thing. But there are things where she's going off on these eloquent things about social justice and whatnot, and it's just like, where the fuck did that all go?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, she was really eloquent. Now it's just like, wow, man, you know, like they pump that helium into your head every day.
You know, I know women like that. I know girls like that.
Why?
I went to high school with a whole lot of girls like that.
We all did, but why? Why do women do that to themselves? I mean, I like.
Because they think that guys aren't going to like them if they're smart.
Boy, those guys are sad. That's all I got to say. There's some sad individuals.
There are a lot of guys. I think, well, I don't know how many, you know, I've never interviewed guys about it, but
yeah.
I think there are a lot of guys who, they don't want a girl that's smarter than them. And given how dumb some of the guys in Texas are, you can see what happened in my high school.
Okay. I just sometimes wonder if, you know, like, you know, because I watch some, you know, streams of American networks and stuff here, and then I see television ads for dating sites in America. And compare them to the same companies that advertise here in Australia.
Yeah? And are they different?
Oh, it's way different. It's so
what do
way...
What they look like there?
Well, it's like the portrayal. It's like here you'll hear more about, you know, finding, you know, a companion, this, that, the other thing. But the United States ones, it's like, Julie knows what she wants. She wants a guy with a great job. So she'll never have to work a day in her life. Treat her like a princess on a fucking thing. And this, and this whole checklist. And she's able to get better dates finding these kind of people. And you're going, wow, man. And I remember this, you know. When I was growing up, girls being told, you know, you got to find yourself a stable man. And I'm sitting there thinking, like, stability means boring usually. So, like, at 20-something, you're supposed to just settle and stop life? Is when it always kind of, you know, isn't life with someone else supposed to be some sort of adventure at least?
Yeah.
But it's just this, you know, that, you know, you're supposed to know exactly what they're going to be when they're 60 at age 28. And you sit there going, wow, man. Again, living this, or being given the idea that there are these standards you have to reach for when they're actually totally meaningless. And the last thing that seems to come up is, like, humor, happiness.
Yeah.
You know, the things that when you have nothing can make it work.
Right.
You know, I notice these things. There's a portrayal. And it's like the marketers know the audience that they're going for, that the way that they go about it in Australia would not work in America, and vice versa.
Okay, on the like Match.com ads and stuff, the guys all look the same.
Because they're sitting there grabbing people that they think is Match, the ultimate prototype from some test marketed group survey. And that's what I mean, you know, it's just like, I've always felt that too many mothers and whatnot added this thing about stability instill these ideals of settling.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Go for the guy with the paycheck, not the guy that might actually make you happy.
Right.
Because I'll tell you what, Gail and
I... Or the guy that's going to treat you well.
Right. Gail and I have had some really tough times financially where we had, like, nothing. And if our relationship was based on all this other superficial crap, 11 years later, we wouldn't still be together. It's all those little things.
There is no stability anymore. I mean, you know, companies have the right to fire you because you press the elevator button with your left hand. I mean, you know, they...
Get your finger broken because you brought them the bill.
It's, you know, they can... companies can fire you for anything, or because Bain Capital took over, or whatever, and then, you know, there is no stability.
Right.
Guys aren't stable, women aren't always stable.
Life isn't stable. That whole idea, you know. But see, this also kind of falls into one of those things, you know, with me and my rejection of all forms of religion, you know. It's kind of a similar thing. I think people that really cling to religion and, like, can't get outside of the theocracy kind of thing is that the idea of uncertainty scares the daylights out of them. So they need a God with some certainty about what happens at the end. And I think it's the same idea, instilling the same kind of servient kind of thing to young women, that you got to go for the stable, otherwise it's not any good. You know,
really?
And it's a complete furphy. And furphy, that's Australian for kind of like a lie. I happen to a relative of mine. I'll make it that vague. Very, very nice woman. Good looking, talented, everything for years. Couldn't find a partner. Her younger sister got married before she did. Her life was over. It was all a mess. But she was constantly out there trying to find the right guy. The guy in the business suit. The guy that had the job. The guy that had the car. The guy that had this. The guy that had that. Then I remember running into her at a cinema once. And she was, for the first time I've ever seen her out of the house, not completely done up, you know, 2 hours work to go out. She was like in baggy jeans and a t-shirt and walking out with this guy that 20 years later is still her husband. And I remember looking at her and I said, this one might last.
Huh. You know what I call that? Have you ever heard me talk about the beauty tax?
No!
Okay, so I think that girls have more trouble getting into college and girls have more trouble finishing high school at the top of their class and all of this, simply because they're expected to spend 2 hours a day on their hair and their makeup before they even leave the house. And that's time that guys can spend sleeping or studying or doing things that are social or something or working.
Yep.
And that it is a beauty tax that girls pay.
I don't
pay it anymore.
Good. Good.
I dress nice and I do makeup when I go out, but not when I go, not just to go to class, not just to go, you know, not just to leave my room.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, I remember when I was more your age, back when I was playing in bands back in the day and, you know, we're all young.
I'm 20 now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, like, 20 years ago, I was that age. Okay.
Some people on the horn still think I'm, like, 15.
No. When I was a young adult and out in the clubs and, you know, playing in a rock and roll band and being single, boys will be boys.
Uh-huh.
But I always used to find it really, really funny. I was usually in a relationship, so I wasn't playing in that, right? But I'd watch band members. And it'd be really funny. You'd see them go for, like, the totally dolled up one, right? And I'd be like, I'd just be sitting there thinking, but she's not going to look like that tomorrow. It's like false advertising. You know, you,
you understand what I'm saying? It's like, that just seems so fake to me. The whole idea, you know? And you just watch these guys, and it's just like, wow, man. You put the war paint on in the right place, and guys become morons. And they become brainless for all that extra 2 hours a day that they get to work on their minds. But, you know, I've never understood the general American kind of line that's given to young women about relationships. You know, and finding the right guy. You know, how the hell are you supposed to know what someone's going to be like in 60 years? And who says that if that's what you think you want then, now, you think you're going to be thinking the same thing when you're 60?
And the way that they lie, how do you even know that that's what they are today?
There's no shortcuts. Hence why I guess I laugh at the dating sites and whatnot. But then again, you know, some people, I know some people, I know some marriages that have happened via dating sites, and so, you know, I can't judge. I just find the whole thing a little bit silly because it just sounds like eBay for breeding.
Oh, wow.
That's kind of what it seems like to me, you know. But, you know, hey.
Yeah, that's a sperm site.
Well, I don't know if you have one of the horrible, I mean, I don't watch reality TV, but there's one here. I imagine it's a spinoff for an American one called The Farmer Wants a Wife. Do you have one of these in the States?
I don't know.
Okay, we got a show down here that I'm telling you.
We have The Bachelor and The Bachelorette.
Well, this is similar. It's like televised prostitution. Right?
So it's prostitution or it's dating?
Nah, it's prostitution, as far as I'm concerned. Because, like, you get a farmer who needs a wife. So they get a bunch of women for him to go pick one from. It's like going to a brothel.
Oh, that's exactly like The Bachelor. From The Bachelor.
So instead of paying for 2 hours, you're making some...
The Bachelor is always really rich.
Yeah. Oh, and again,
he's not a poor farmer.
That again is pushing that same false bullshit line too. It's like why you'll never catch me taking my kid to a Disney film, ever. Things like Sleeping Beauty and all that, it all pushes the wrong message constantly, constantly.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Can't stand it. You know. Just can't stand it. Haven't, you know, people like, oh, Lion King. Never seen it. Never will.
The Lion King doesn't do it nearly as much.
No. I know that's a little bit of the exception.
Yeah.
But I just, I can't go there. I just can't go there. And I love animation, especially old style animation. I love Warner Brothers. I love all that stuff. But I just can't cop it. Because there's never anything progressively positive, and not saying that they have to be a leftist company, but, you know, seriously, can we stop pushing the pink princess stuff on little girls?
I hope so.
Because I think it just really, it's that playing women short, just like anything, you know, I don't like anyone being made to be less than they can be, which I guess I think you might have a line on that whole Andrea Mitchell thing that I might not have considered at all. All I just saw was like going, really? This woman with like that broadcasting career, no matter how much I might not like her husband, she's doing an ad talking about like women can be as good reporters as anybody. I'm like, really? We're doing this now? But you might have a better line, you know? The fact that she and Rachel are definitely the antithesis of any of the female heads that are on Fox.
Yeah.
So what are you studying at the moment?
Well, I have a major.
Which is?
Human values. The human values curriculum, where pretty much everything you study is it's like a liberal arts curriculum and some science and, you know, all languages, but it's all from the perspective of human values, of how do we value each other and how do we care for and about each other. And it's really cool.
That sounds great. I had not heard of that as a major.
It's pretty new.
It sounds like
it's pretty new. It's cross-curricular, but I really like it.
That's fantastic. Sounds like a new version of what used to be part of like a liberal arts degree of sorts, but you know, it just sounds like the kind of thing that people need to be studying.
Yeah.
You know, could.
And I'm involved in the Green Club. You'll be glad to know.
Right on. Oh, that actually reminds me. And you're a good one to have on for this. Speaking of Green Club, Gene sent me, and I got to find it here. It's around here somewhere.
All of Princeton University is now run by wind and solar farms that are all like 2 miles west of campus.
You sent me links.
I sent you that.
Yeah. It was fantastic. And it just shows you that things are possible.
Yep.
Gene sent this to me a couple of days ago, and this blew me away. You know, all this stuff about, you know, the renewables aren't viable, this, that, and the other thing. What if I told you an entire country was going to be completely renewable energy by 2020?
Wow. Which country? In Germany?
Nope.
Hold on. Where?
Scotland.
Scotland?
Get this. This is amazing. And they're all, and I mean, they are on budget and on timeline. Check this out, folks. This is really great. You can find it at Tree Hugger. It's probably on the show post. But they're talking about how the First Minister of Scotland announced that his government was aiming to power all of Scotland with 100% renewable energy by 2025. Just a few months later, they kicked it up a notch or five and moved it to 2020 for entirely renewable energy. Most of that would come from ambitious onshore and offshore wind farms, as well as some smaller wave and tidal power projects. They're already at 7 gigawatts of power. They expect to be at 17 by the time they get to their first kind of signpost, their first progress report. And they're ahead of schedule, even the schedule that they took 5 years off of. So it's looking like, and even their biggest naysayers came back, and this is from one of the biggest skeptics, said 2011 was an epic year for Scottish energy companies. The Department for Energy and Climate Change released figures recently demonstrating that renewable energy sector saw more than £750 million of investment last year. Currently, 7 gigawatts of renewable projects are operational, under construction, or approved. Several projects are in the pipeline to eventually deliver 17 gigawatts of power with an estimated investment of $64 billion. Scotland is already well on its way to hit its interim target of 31%. So they're, in like 2 years, going to already be covering 31% of their power by renewable energy. Anyone in America who says that it can't be done needs to shut up now.
Wow. And is Scotland in one of the austerity countries?
No. And in fact, they're trying to break away out of being part of the United Kingdom because they keep getting the short shrift. They're doing a better job at handling their affairs than the rest of the UK, at least from what I understand. And, they seem to want to actually, because they've taken it on basically as a move to put Scotland as a country in the midst or at the forefront of developing technology. So they're helping to develop and refine some of this tidal technology, which they'll end up being able to sell to other people.
Wow.
You know, they're already saying for it all to really work, the cost of generation has to come down 20%. But with the investment that they're putting in, by the time they get to their targets, it will
have come down because they've made the investment to bring it down. So it's just, it's a complete win-win, and I think this case study needs to be brought around everywhere. I think this needs to be something that, like, Bob and I have had conversations about that, you know, we need to start having some talks with some other people in the environmental movement about where does the international movement go from here? And I think we need to use examples of places like Scotland here.
It has to be international, because if you just wait for the U.S., then the gas and coal companies, you know, who bought Congress, will get rid of anything. It's going to have to be international.
Yeah, and it's not just the United States government that they own. I mean, they've got money in here. Thankfully, we haven't had something like Citizens United yet. But, you know, we're seeing the manipulation of the media and whatnot here, but it's not near what goes on over there. It's bizarre sometimes when I sit and watch American TV on the web, and I just go, wow, man. It's just like a constant fight of ideology and just kind of making people swim, you know, in the propaganda of one side or another, and usually the one that they're hearing is the right side, the right-wing side, rather. Bizarre. I find it really weird, because I've gotten so used to it being a little bit more tamed down, and when it gets too partisan here, the public usually has a bit of a backlash on both sides. Something's different over there. Something got in the water.
Well, okay, you want a crazy thing to think about before I hang up?
Oh, sure.
Okay, so you know that when they have inaugurations for presidents, it's around now, it's like January 19th, January 20th,
yeah.
Something like that. So 25 years from now, they will be inaugurating Kathy as president.
Kathy. Cassie. I was like on Kathy. Cassie.
Yeah.
Good. So we're still going to keep you on that trail, huh?
Yeah.
Right on. Be the longest campaign in history.
Yeah, I started when I was 14.
Well, that's awesome. That is just awesome.
That is,
yeah. So 2025, what, 2025?
2036.
What is the cutoff age for presidency? So
35.
35, right.
So, no, wait. I was born in 91. Hold on. Now I have to add and subtract and stuff. All right, I'm 20 now, so 15 years. No, it can be
2017.
It can be sooner than that.
Anyway.
Well, 2027, so 28 on our election year.
There you go. But I'm going to wrap it up.
Anyway, but we're there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'll mark that date in my Google calendar. Maybe Google okay. Still exists then. I think I can go that far ahead. I should try. I think that'd be hilarious.
You should come to the inauguration.
Oh, geez. That happens. You know I'll be there.
That would be so cool. Have you and Bob?
Oh yeah, we'll be your media liaisons.
Okay.
All right, Cassie, it's really good to talk to you, sweetheart, and it's so glad to hear you're going well in Jersey and everything, and at uni and getting into it, and that the snow didn't scare you too much.
No, I decided I like it.
Yeah, it's good. It's good fun. And there's something really neat when the snow's fallen overnight and you open up the window and just kind of wherever you live looks a little bit magical for a while. It's pretty cool.
Oh, and it sounds so cool. It's like it's the quietest, prettiest quiet.
Yeah, because nobody can drive. It's great. All right, Cassie, you take care of yourself, darling. It's great to talk to you.
Good talking to you. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye. Ah, the Wonder Kid. Jeez, she's still planning on doing this whole presidential thing. Mad. Okay, before we get out of here, I have to go to this. It's my only thing for prayer meeting. As I was sitting there going through the various different links of things that the various ninjas sent me over the last few days to prep for this show, I got sent one link, And there was a link at that page for something else, and I had to go read it. Because like I said, how I feel that the United States seems to be living some fucking really bizarre Atwood novel. You know, women's rights under attack, you know. Got people sitting there talking about uppity black people being put in their place, like Juan Williams. And all that. Then just this kind of thing pops out at me, and it just makes me scream. From the westward.com blogs, which is in Denver, I believe. Tim Tebow's rib injury versus Patriots like Jesus' wounds. Stop crucifying him. Okay, so this guy in his op-ed piece says the injury comes from news comes from ESPN's Adam Schefter, who reports that during the third quarter of the game, Tebow was hit while standing in the pocket as he attempted to throw a pass. The blow caused a rib cartilage tear, a bruised lung, and fluid buildup in the pleural space of his chest. Hurts that weren't fully diagnosed until an MRI on Monday, which was scheduled, blah, 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 blah. Much like the rest of Broncos Nation, the Jesus connection? Look no further than the crucifixion page presented by In His Step Ministries, according to the account written by Dr. C. Truman Davis, who takes medical angle on the tale. Jesus appeared to have perished on the cross, but to make doubly sure of death, the legionnaire drove his lance through the fifth interspace between the ribs, upward through the pericardium and into the heart, and immediately there came out blood and water. Pierced between the ribs, fluid in the chest, the similarities are uncanny. Holy fuck! This is reporting on sports? That the country has gone so up its little evangelical fucking ass that we actually have people sitting going, oh, I broke a rib, it's just like Jeebish! Fuck you! And the fact that there are people that follow this stuff. I go, oh, he's so nice. He's so good. Meanwhile, every time he goes down on one knee and puts that cross, he's fucking spitting in the face of every other person of any other faith or no faith. As the whole media machine and all the God-fearing fucking Christians up there going, isn't he fucking sweet? I can't wait for the day when we finally see the pictures of him snorting cocaine off some gay hooker's ass. It's gonna happen and you know it. Anyone that pious always falls. Gonna find out that he's raping little girls. Or he's just another crystal Methodist. But it's when people believe the shit and constantly push this crap as though it actually is in somehow real. The country has completely lost its way. It's lost all form of being able to take care of itself. When over a football game, a game that's hardly even a game anymore, that's controlled by television. You know, and it goes, it's just that whole thing, too. You know, you think there's not Christians on the other side? On the other team? Ah, so it's the right kind of Christian over the wrong kind of Christian. I see how this shit works. However, the hypocrisy might make you look better. These are the symptoms of a seriously sick society, in my mind. Where even your entertainment has to be tied up in mythology. Bunch of whack jobs. Now, and what the other thing that we'll probably find out is that he's not even a practicing Christian, really. It's all just a show because it made him a bunch of fucking money. Because, you know, in America, all you gotta do is be a good God-fearing Christian! and say you is, but you don't have to actually do anything Christ-like. With that, I'm going to head off. Thanks for being here, folks. Thanks to the News Ninjas, Betsy, Gene, Sparky, Lottie. Sparky and Lottie, you take care of the chat room. Everybody who stuck around, David, thanks for ringing in. Sandra, always awesome. Bob will be back tomorrow. Bob will be on air tomorrow. I'm not sure what time he's starting with a whole lot of programming on the horn, so keep an eye on the blog and on the Facebook page over the Head On Facebook page. Friend me. Find me at Foxed Up. I don't know. Leave your comments. And hopefully it won't be so long till you hear me again. Until such time, thanks to everybody. Thanks to Coal River Mountain Watch, the hardest working people we know, fighting the good fight. And with that, Gina and Judy, it's all for you.